will chill you down. Take a listen from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. And I'll be back on Friday. Enjoy and stay strong.
With Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And we are broadcasting live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Don't forget, you can always, if you miss an hour, you can go get an hour at whiterosesociety.org, where the wake-up call is archived daily. Also, you can do us on your iPod as well. And you can email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. Check out my website at lizbrown, that's LIZZBROWN.com. Those are my digits. You need to get to me. I every day, every single day without fail, we talk about the tragedies, the crimes, the pain, the suffering, the cruelty, the thievery that is going on in Iraq every day. When you think that it can't get any worse, you read a story coming out of France, reporting out of France that babies, 24 babies were killed in a bombing, a suicide bombing, while grabbing candy from soldiers in Humvees. 25 babies, Iraqi babies, were killed. We hear stories of Karl Rove stonewalling, saying he did not give up the name of Miss Plain. I remember he gave it up because he was mad at her husband, who was telling the truth that George W. Bush was using falsified information to get us into a war. And one of the phrases that we all resonate with, particularly with what has happened in England, the phrase that we resonate with is 9/11. They came, they got us on 9/11, right? There's not an American, I don't think, or so few that it is statistically insignificant, that hasn't seen a picture or a television image of those buildings falling down after the planes ran into them. But the reality is that there are people out there that have a great number of questions about how those buildings fell the way that they fell. What really happened on 9/11? Was it what it appeared, what we were told it was? Simply that some planes crashed into the buildings and the buildings fell down afterwards. Well, the best evidence, I know this as an attorney, is eyewitness evidence as to, if you're attempting to reconstruct a scene, the best witness is eyewitness testimony. And there are men that have testified, or one man that has testified, and people have said that something else happened in that building on September 11th. We have joining us this morning Greg S. Szymanski. He's a reporter, the American Free Press, and Arctic Beacon. He's joining us from L.A. Greg has written extensively on what happened on 9/11. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm fine.
Very good. Greg, we may be mistaken about what happened on 9/11.
Well, we're not only mistaken. I am 100% sure, after interviewing a number of people, and especially one gentleman by the name of William Rodriguez, that what occurred in that building that morning, especially in the North Tower that morning, wasn't as the government said. And if I could just run down, basically the official story from day one has never changed, and they said that jet fuel from the airplane that hit the tower on the higher floors caused the building to collapse. Well, Mr. Rodriguez had a different story to tell, and his story goes something like this.
Well, if we could back up just a little before we get to his story, Ken, you've also written about people that have come in and scientists that have evaluated the building, the way that the buildings have fall. The way that the buildings fell, and they've said that they couldn't have fallen like that.
Well, of course. What they said was basically that the government basically contended that the fuel heated the buildings to a sufficient degree which weakened the structures and brought it down in a pancake-like fashion. However, scientists on the other side and engineers that have looked at this, and even I've talked to a jet pilot who has flown for American Airlines and United Airlines for 35 years and has flown planes like supposedly hit the World Trade Center. And he said that it would be impossible for this to occur. One, that the planes, 90% of the fuel burnt outside. Secondly, jet fuel burns cold, not hot. And would never have reached a temperature high enough to bring down the towers as it did. Also, there's never been a high-rise building ever that has gone down just by an airplane strike. So you have testimony on both sides scientifically, of course, which, as you know as a lawyer, is looked at and weighed depending on the credibility. However, when there is a dispute such as this, the next thing that's going to happen is that in any criminal investigation, you're going to want to get people who are actually there to help bring, you know, a jury or, in this case, the American public to some kind of conclusion. And that's where Mr. Rodriguez comes in.
So let's talk about Mr. Rodriguez.
Well,
how did you find him?
Well, first of all, about a year ago, I believe it was, there was a federal lawsuit filed in Philadelphia by an attorney by the name of Phil Berg, and he has filed a RICO lawsuit against President Bush and about 50 other defendants, claiming that there was a conspiracy to bring about 9/11 or foreknowledge of 9/11 before, during, and after the fact. And in this complaint, William Rodriguez is the lead plaintiff. And so because of that, I wrote a number of stories about this lawsuit and the statements made by Mr. Rodriguez or through Mr. Berg. And then finally, I believe it was about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, Mr. Rodriguez had contacted me, and we began talking. And I was astounded of what I learned and what I didn't know and what the American people have not known. First of all, Mr. Rodriguez was in the North Tower. He'd worked for the World Trade Center for 20 years. Okay. On September 11th, Mr. Rodriguez came to work about a half hour late. He usually gets to work about 8 o'clock for a miracle of fate. That probably saved his life because he normally goes up to the Windows of the World restaurant, which is up at the top of the towers, and would have been in direct contact with the with the plane strike. But at this time, Mr. Rodriguez was down in a sub-level basement one office.
What was his job?
He was the head of maintenance,
mm-hmm.
and also was the only person that had a key to all the stairwells that
mm-hmm.
morning. And it'll play into, that's a very important fact if you listen to what occurred that morning. This is Mr. Rodriguez talking now. He came to work at 8:30 instead of 8 o'clock. So he went down into a sub-level one basement. You should know that the World Trade Center has 6 sub-levels. And he was in a sub-level one basement, so it's the first floor of the basement. And he's in an office with 14 other people. Now, remember what I said. 14 other people. He's not alone. When, out of nowhere, he hears a blast. Now, the blast comes from below him, which at the time, and all the other 14 people hear this, which at the time, what happens is the floor shakes, the walls begin to crack, And it's a massive explosion, he thinks, as do the others, from below.
And if we could just stop for a second just to let people resonate with what you're saying, he's in a sub-basement.
Right.
His floor is shaking, which means that it's beneath him.
Exactly. Well, it just as fast as you could say, you know, wow, it's a bomb that hit, which he did say, they hear a distant blast above. Okay. And he was, and this happened seconds later, here's a blast above, and that came from a, he didn't know at the time, but that probably, that was the airplane that hit above. So what he's saying, and what these 14 people will verify, okay, is that they heard a sound prior to the airplane hitting. Now, to even make this testimony more compelling to a jury and to the American people, a few seconds after that, in comes a man by the name of Felipe David. He worked for a company called Aramac Company, which was a beverage company, and he was busy working on the sub-level about 200 or 300 feet away at a front of an elevator shaft. And what Mr. David recalls, and I have got his testimony on tape, which was made a year after 9/11, he recalls all of a sudden, a big explosion below him. He then feels heat generating and then flashing through the elevator. He then throws himself to the floor and is burnt severely on his face, hands, and arms. And he says, while on the floor, my God, I'm going to die, help me. So he gets some strength, he gets up, and he runs to the office where Mr. Rodriguez is at. Mr. Rodriguez and the 14 others look at Mr. David, and he's got skin hanging from his arms and legs, their arms and hands. And my God, he runs in yelling, explosion, explosion, explosion. So at that time, what Mr. Rodriguez does is he takes Mr. David and the other people, they run out of the World Trade Center to the top. And Mr. David then is taken to an ambulance. So at the same time, Mr. Rodriguez then notices, some time passes, and he notices up above, I believe at this time he notices that there's an airplane strike above. Well, he goes back into the building against police orders. Basically, a policeman, fireman try to stop him and say, you can't go in. And he says, the hell I can. I got to help my friends. Well, anyway, he runs back in to the World Trade Center, goes down to the 14th floor, or goes down to the sub-level 1 elevator, and runs into a gentleman. Here's some people screaming in an elevator. And in this elevator is a gentleman by the name of Salvatore Giambanco, who worked as a painter in the WTC, and he's with another person who he doesn't know who it is, and they are screaming, and they are trapped between a B-2 and B-3 elevator.
So, again, sub-basement level.
Well, they heard, now Mr. Giambanco's testimony is this, and this was made to a Colombian TV station on the year anniversary of 9/11, which was never aired in America and completely ignored by the 9/11 Commission, all newspapers, and this is an interesting part of the story that I'd like to tell. Once I get in, I'll hold Mr. Giambanco's testimony until I explain what happened, along with another gentleman who's also come forward named Felipe Sanchez, who was on the fourth sub-level, who talks about the same explosion. Well, anyway, I have their stories also, which are on my website and also be appearing in the American Free Press. Now, what happened was, all this stuff is out in the open for everybody to know. And this is no secret 4 years later now. And I'm not sitting here breaking a story that nobody knew about. Well, the Colombian newspaper, the Colombian TV station already published or had already aired their statements in 2002 in Colombian Spanish. Well, here's what happened to Mr. Rodriguez and to the other people so far. Mr. Rodriguez was declared a national hero for saving numerous lives that day, and I can get into that part later. he'd been cajoled and taken to the White House and declared a national hero. But when it came time for his story to be told, here's how the media treated him. First,
I need you to hold on that because
okay.
we have to take a break. I'm talking to Greg Szymanski. He's a reporter, the American Free Press, and Arctic Beacon. He is joining us from L.A., California. And this is Liz Brown on the wake-up call. This is amazing stuff, folks. This is amazing stuff. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. We'll be back. Stay with us.
I don't care what others say. They think we don't listen anyway. Time has come today.
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is their attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong. Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. Do you still think that Saddam Hussein had something to do with the attack on the Twin Towers on 9/11? Listen to my 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. segment, and you'll be clear. 2 years ago, I interviewed William Rodriguez, the head of the maintenance at the Twin Towers on 9/11. And what he saw, and what he heard, and what he felt will chill you to the bone. Take a listen this morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., and I'll be back on Friday. Enjoy and stay strong.
Previously on the Sloan Ranger program.
How come we don't call the government nuts? Because they have sometimes outlandish conspiracy stories. When the government does it, apparently it's okay, but when anybody else does it, then it's wacky. Speaking of that, how come Hillary wasn't called a nutcase for her vast right-wing conspiracy theory that allegedly explained the Monica Lewinsky affair, and nobody ever called her a conspiracy nut? Which is exactly what should have happened. Should have been laughed off the Today Show.
For the smartest talk on radio, it's the Sloan Ranger Show. Weekdays at 5 o'clock. Only on AM 920 WGNU.
Is cocaine a problem in your life? Cocaine Anonymous is a fellowship of people helping people to recover from cocaine addiction. There are no dues or fees of any kind. We're here, and we're free. For meeting schedules and information, call 314-361-3500. Or the Cocaine Anonymous National Referral Line at 1-800-347-8998. Or contact us on the World Wide Web at ca.org.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
People, have you heard about Golden Grocer Natural Market? It's locally owned and operated for over 30 years and serving and meeting your health needs by ensuring the best quality and selection in vitamin supplements and organic groceries. Golden Grocer Natural Market has the largest loose herb selection around. You can also get your grains and natural beauty items as well. Their staff is friendly, knowledgeable, and committed to helping you on your journey to improved and enhanced health. Golden Grocer believes that the healthiest goal is achieving balance in every area of your life. So, live your life like it's golden, and let Golden Grocer help you along the way. Golden Grocer, Natural Market, 335 North Euclid, right there in the Central West End. Open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 12 to 5. Golden Grocer, 367-0405. That's 367-0405.
More to come with the best of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. We'll have a traffic report for you in just a moment. At AM 920 WGNU, Charles here as promised with a WGNU traffic report. That accident earlier this morning has been cleared on eastbound 44 near the viaduct at Pacific. Slow traffic on westbound 5570 approaching the Poplar Street Bridge. Westbound 70, a bit of a mess on that stretch between Mid Rivers Mall Drive and Highway 79. An accident reported. Road construction eastbound between 79 and Mid Rivers Mall on I-70. That means the right lane closed, a bit tricky out there. Traffic flowing freely northbound Illinois 3 at the PSB. Looking at the King Bridge, normal traffic between the Illinois Bank and Laclede's Landing. Otherwise, not much else to report at this hour. Currently 62 degrees at AM 920 WGNU at last check, 61 degrees at Lambert Field. Sunny skies today, the high in the mid-80s, clear tonight with the low in the mid-60s. We'll return with more of the best of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call after a few short announcements.
Time Life presents the complete 10 CD Classic Soul Ballads Collection. 144 sensual ballads. Luther Vandross, Al Green, Barry White, Aretha Franklin. Just to be close. And now, for the first time ever, you can check out the entire 10 CD collection for 30 days for just $9.95. But wait, when you order with your credit card, you'll get free shipping and handling. That's a savings of nearly $13. So order with your credit card, and for just $9.95, you can enjoy all 10 CDs of classic soul ballads in your home. And we'll ship it to you free. If it's not the best collection you've ever heard, send it back and owe nothing more.
Call 1-800-313-6969. That's 1-800-313-6969. 1-800-313-6969.
Are you one of those people who look at somebody who's big boned and think that's just a euphemism for Twinkie enriched? Are you sick of the idea that we can go to war in Serbia and bomb the crud out of them, but we should stay out of Iraq? If the whole entire pop culture thing, Britney Spears, Super Bowl commercials, and all that stuff gets on your nerves, well, guess what? It gets on mine, too. So if you want someone to listen and understand, listen to me, Brett Rosen, every Tuesday, 10 a.m. on WGNU, 920 a.m.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Son, what you don't understand, my words might never explain. So I am hoping that time will. Things may not go as you planned,
dark clouds might bring you pain, but I will be in your heart still, telling you don't look down. Don't feast your eyes on things that are on the ground. And if it gets hard to focus when you're traveling almost at the speed of sound, feeling nowhere bound, remember what I told you.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I am Liz Brown. You can catch me on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. That's where we broadcast live, and you can always pick up an hour of the show, or two, or three, or four, or five, or six, at whiterosesociety.org, where the Wake Up Call is archived daily. Check me out at lizbrown.com. That's LIZZBROWN.com, or email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. We are talking this morning to Greg Seismansky. He's a reporter, the American Free Press, and Arctic Beacon. He's joining us from L.A., and we are talking about the one of the most incredible stories that you've never heard before, what really happened on 9/11. Greg, welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
And you were talking about how the press treated Mr. Rodriguez.
Yeah, and this is probably one of the most amazing stories, makes it even more suspect on what happened. Basically, you would think, with all that eyewitness testimony, and I didn't get into Mr. Jim Bonko's testimony when he was in an elevator, trapped, and hearing the same explosion, and also Mr. Felipe Sanchez on D4, hearing the same explosion and experiencing the same things, you would think that all this testimony would be greeted with open arms by the press and by the 9/11 Commission. However, it was just the opposite. It's been a concealed effort over the last 4 years to keep these gentlemen quiet, to the point where Mr. Rodriguez has even been warned by reporters for some of the bigger publications, advising him in kind of a subtle intimidation to, why don't you, you know, you don't know who you're dealing with, why don't you just, you know, keep quiet. Well, Mr. Rodriguez, from the beginning, has been on a mission, and the reason he's wants to tell the truth and tell this to the American people and will not stop is because he lost 200 friends there, along with 3,000 people in the building that he worked with for 20 years. And he believes that the only thing that America should expect is at least a forthright truth and investigation into this, which they haven't gotten. And if you listen to his, what's happened to him afterwards, you'll see that something strange is going on inside the media. I call it a media blackout on this, on the major stories.
Mr. Rodriguez is joining us.
Oh, great.
We got him. William Rodriguez, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine. God bless you and everybody that is listening right now.
Well, God bless you, and thank you for joining the show. Greg has been bringing us up to speed, but I know that the listeners would love to hear from your voice, William. What happened on 9/11? Can you tell us in your own words?
9/11, 8:46, I was at the basement of the North Tower, the sub-level number one. That's where all the support offices for the whole complex were located, and that's where my company was located. I was there talking to a supervisor when I heard a huge explosion, and it shook so hard the floor, and it came out from below. I felt that it came from below. And number one, I was there for 20 years. I knew the difference that of something coming from the top, from the side, or from downstairs. Number two, it was a microsecond, because when I went to verbalize it, I thought at that moment that it was an electrical generator that blew up on the mechanical room right below us. When I went to verbalize it, then I heard another explosion, but that was the impact coming from far away, and it felt that it was coming from the top. So it was a big difference, and a couple of seconds, one after the other. At that moment, a person comes running into the office screaming, explosion, explosion, explosion. And this poor guy had all his skin pulled from under his armpit all the way to the top of the fingertips, and he was missing pieces of his face. And I said, what happened? And he said, the elevators. And
everybody was screaming. These are the basement elevators.
The basement, yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, he worked for a company called Automark, which does the supplies for all the vending machines. And he was doing an inventory in a little room down there. And apparently, he said that he heard this huge explosion and flames coming all over and a heat wave burning him. He put his hands in front of his face to try to cover from the burning situation. And that's how his skin got all pulled out. And so he made it to our office. There were 14 people there, all screaming. And I said, don't move. I'm going to call the EMS, which were located on the other building. When I went to pick up the phone, another explosion. I saw later on that it was the jet fuel from the wings of the plane that were blowing up, something that, of course, I could not corroborate. Mm-hmm. I was just feeding what I was being fed at that moment as information. But, again, I felt all this time that it was a bomb, a terrorist attack inside the basement. And so did everybody else. And we started screaming, and the floor was moving so hard, the walls cracked, everything was shaking, the false ceiling fell down, the sprinkler system got activated. And so I started pushing everybody out of the office and brought them outside the loading dock area. There I put Mr. Felipe David, which was the name of the person that was burned, inside an ambulance, and that's when I heard a plane hit the tower. When I turned around and I looked up, I saw the hole, I saw the fire, I saw the debris, but it was so far away, and at the same time I could not see the antenna because of the smoke. The smoke was so dense that it was covering the antenna all the way to the top. So I started screaming, we gotta go back. The people from Windows, we gotta go back. Windows of the World was the restaurant at the top of the building. And I was very concerned because, number one, I had too many friends up there. And number two, because I started every morning cleaning the stairwells. My job position was the maintenance person in charge of all the stairwells of the North Tower. So I started my routine going to the Windows of the World, having breakfast with the people over there because they gave it to us for free, and then going down doing floor by floor. The strange thing was that day I came in late. I was supposed to be there at 8 o'clock, so it was a miracle that I survived that. I would have been caught at the top. So I started running inside the building because nobody wanted to go in. As a matter of fact, everybody was saying, "You stay here. You can go in." And I just said, the heck with everybody, and I went in by myself, and there I found two guys that were located on the other building, building one and building two, connected through the basement. And the people in the building two just came out from their own basement, and they didn't even know what was happening. And I said, you gotta get out. I think there's a bomb or something. And I heard that a plane hit the building, and they couldn't believe it. So they came out. I went to the OCC, which was the Operation Control Center that they set up after the 1993 bombing. And there was nobody there. So I run back to building one, again through the basement, and I found a guy that worked for the recycling company screaming, I hear screams. And I put my ear in one of the freight elevators, and there were two people stuck in there screaming. You couldn't hear very well because all the sprinkler system, the switching sound, was so hard that it was muffling their screams. So I said, how many people are there? And one of the guys said, two people. There was a painter named Salvatore Giambanco and a delivery guy. And they were stuck and encapsulated between two floors, between the B2 and the B3 level. And all the water from the sprinkler systems were going down the elevator shaft, and they had the water going up on the elevator, so they were afraid that they were going to drown. And I looked around, I found a metal piece of pipe, and I broke the door mechanism, and when I saw that it was too deep, I started screaming, oh my God, God help me, what can I do? And I just remembered that in the area where they had the trash compactors, the electricians, they always have ladders that they use to do work around the area, but they always tie them up with chains so nobody will steal them. So I went running, and I said, God, please let me find one. And the incredible thing that the longest one of it, it was an 18-foot long ladder, was not chained. I took it, I dropped it inside the elevator shaft, opened the grate, got them both out, took them outside the building, put them in an ambulance, and went back running inside the building. Again, everybody screaming not to go in there. As I get in, I found Police Officer David Lim from the Port Authority Department, and he said, Willie, do you have the key? He meant the master key. I have the only master key available that opened all the doors in the building on the North Tower at that moment. And I said, yes, follow me. And we went to the lobby. The fire department was there waiting. And I told them, don't wait for the elevator. The elevator is gone. Follow me. I have the key. And they followed me. We went floor by floor, opening the doors and letting people out. And the crazy thing is that the building was a Class A building. That meant that because it was such a skyscraper, over 50 floors up, they needed to have some kind of safety system, and it was that three doors will not open from the stairwell, and one will open, and one open all the way to the top.
Oh my God!
They did that in case that if it was a fire, the building would not be consumed in a matter of minutes, and they may be able to maybe sacrifice a floor or two, but they'd be able to save as much people as possible. And that's a standard codification that they have in there. So it was kind of crazy. So that's why that master key was so crucial at that moment. And as we went up floor by floor...
You went up 50 floors.
I'm sorry?
You went up 50 floors.
No, I went up to 39 floors.
39
floors. As I went up, I heard different kind of explosions. And on those explosions, a 903 Building 2 gets hit. When Building 2 gets hit, it shakes our building so hard that you hear kind of a rubble. And then at the same time, I continue hearing little explosions on different floors above me. And on the 34th floor, I heard something that was very strange. I heard very strange movements on the top of the floor. And strange movement because it was an empty floor. That was a construction site. As we speak, I will tell you that the floor was closed. You could not get there by an elevator. You have to get there through the stairwell. The stairwell were closed. And to hear these kind of movements was very strange for me. So I got scared, and I actually continued by myself because the actual fire department, they all completely collapsed on the floor. They couldn't continue going up because it was so hard for them because of the amount of equipment that they have in their bags. So I continue going up, and when I get to the top of the 39th floor, I'm met there by the police officer from the other stairwell and two lieutenants from the fire department. As we are speaking at that moment, it's 9:56, we hear another huge explosion, and apparently Building 2 started to collapse. And inside our building, the North Tower, something that you don't see on the videos, you hear boom, 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 boom. And it's collapsing inside the building. And you hear, we lost 65, we lost 65 on the police or fire department radio. We have three different kind of frequencies there, so I cannot pinpoint which one was it. And meaning that the 65th floor collapsed floor by floor up to the sky lobby, which was the 44th floor. And I'm on the 39th floor. We're only five flights away. And I go into a frenzy, we got to go up, we got to go up. And the police officer told me, Willie, you've done enough, but you don't get paid for this. Get out. And I said, no, I'm going to continue going up. He said, no, listen, you're still a civilian. Get out. Better if you give me a hand with the person that is on a wheelchair. There was a person on a wheelchair on the 27th floor that was having an asthma attack. And he was put on a gurney to try to bring him down. But, again, the fire department was so tired and so exhausted of all those stairwells that you know, they were just hanging around on the corridor. And I ran down. I said to the police officer, I will go down. I will take this guy out, but I'm coming right back. I'm not giving the key to anybody. So I went down running to the 27th floor, and I said, I have orders by the police department to get this guy out right now. three firemen stood up and said, let's go. I took part of the gurney and all the other trees, and we started going down the stairwell. As we go down the stairwell, the building started to collapse, building one. It's the South Tower. And it was horrible because it's pieces and chunks of concrete falling all over us, and the walls cracked. You could see right through the shiprock. You could hear screams of people stuck on the elevators. It was horrible. And the smoke was an acrid smoke between of a smell of sulfur and ammonia that stuck into your throat. I remember going down and actually smelling the rug on one of the floors because I looked down and I started screaming if there was not somebody here to follow my voice. And I could feel the wetness of the rug itself because of the sprinkler system. And I continue going down with these people. And as we get to the lobby now, one of the firemen looks at me and said, get the ambulance ready. But now I'm in shock because when I look up, I see all that beautiful marble that was inside the building totally pulled from the walls. The only thing that you saw was cement patches where the marble was before. I looked to the left, and the whole plaza was collapsed. The mezzanine was gone. And I said, oh, my God, what happened? What is this? It looked like a war zone, very dantesque. And the guy said, get the ambulance ready. So I walked towards my right, towards the West Side Avenue. And as I get closer to the exit or to the entrance of the building, I see that there's not a glass intact. Everything is gone. There's no glass nowhere. It's all shattered. There's dust, this gray dust everywhere. And I get to the front of the revolving doors. When I get to the front of the revolving doors, they're gone. There's no revolving doors. They're broken. And I'm there on that little cubicle, that area, and I hear screams from a block and a half away. It's the police department. They have the area cordoned out, screaming, don't look back, don't look back. So the first thing I do, I look back because I don't want to get hit by anything. It's just human nature. And when I turn around, what I see is all the bodies of the people that jump out of the buildings scattered on the floor, and you couldn't recognize their faces or their bodies because it was horrible. It just the impact itself, it's like they melted on the floor. And I said, God, what is this? Oh, my God. And I look up and I see half of the Marriott Hotel is collapsed, is gone. And all of a sudden, this is microsecond, Liz. This is, one fragment of a second after another. I hear, run. And I feel like an earthquake right under my feet. And the only thing I see is a fire truck right in front of the revolving door, parked by the fire department to evacuate the building. And so I start running, and I say, this is going to kill me. This building, if you put it sideways, it goes up to Chinatown. It's so tall. Mm. So the only thing I said, this is going to kill me. So I slid right under the fire truck, and as I put my leg in, the building started to collapse right on top. And you could hear boom, 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 and the fire truck going down. And the only thing I remember saying was, God, please don't let my mother see my body in parts. Mm. Let her recognize my body. Please, please, let her recognize my body. Because I figured it was going to be a horrible death. So I started to concentrate there. I said, let me make it last as much as I can. And the building, all of a sudden, when I finished saying that, everything stopped. And this huge wind of dust and heat went under every orifice of the fire truck. And it burnt my face, my eyes, burnt my leg. It was horrible. I couldn't breathe. I remember that it was so bad. But apparently, they were actually filming from across the street, the media, some media outlets, and they pinpointed right away to the rescue efforts. They said, the last person came out from that area, and they pinpointed the area, and they started looking around that area, and that's how several hours later I was pulled from the rubble. When I was pulled from the rubble, I had a fire safety jacket that was given to me to actually help on the evacuation. And they thought I was one of the firemen. I remember when I was pulled out, there was dust everywhere. You couldn't see anything. And I saw a flashlight and a person screaming, this way, follow me, follow me. So I went to the towards the flashlight, and I saw the word ambulance backwards. I got there, and I got...
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. Do you still think that Saddam Hussein had something to do with the attack on the Twin Towers on 9/11? Listen to my 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. segment, and you'll be clear. 2 years ago, I interviewed William Rodriguez, the head of the maintenance at the Twin Towers on 9/11. And what he saw, and what he heard, and what he felt will chill you to the bone. Take a listen this morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., and I'll be back on Friday. Enjoy and stay strong.
And we will return with more on WGNU Granite City, St. Louis.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Karen Chase. They're not the kind of people who carry ID or use their real names. Investigators say that's why they're having trouble identifying the seven suspects now in custody in connection with a weekend of failed terror attacks in the UK. Officials say two of them are doctors. British Home Secretary Jackie Smith says times have been tense.
We're facing the most serious threat and sustained threat from terrorism, and in particular Al-Qaeda-related terrorism.
A secret law enforcement report prepared for Homeland Security officials in the U.S. warns that Al-Qaeda is planning a, quote, terror spectacular this summer. President Bush says the thwarted attacks in the U.K. are a reminder that you never know where terrorists will strike and why Americans must remain vigilant. It wasn't gunboat diplomacy, but speedboat diplomacy the president was practicing in Kennebunkport, Maine, where he took Russian President Putin for a brief ride with his own dad, former President Bush, on the water to break the ice. ABC's Ann Compton has the story.
Three presidents were grinning for the cameras when Vladimir Putin first arrived at the Bush family compound, and he seemed to be smiling still when a few minutes later, Putin was speeding out to sea for a sunset cruise aboard the Bush powerboat.
It's been a record-breaking fundraising stretch for presidential hopeful Barack Obama, who raised $32 million in the second quarter. ABC's Liz Marlantes in Washington says that kind of money can be campaign clout.
As we learned in the last presidential campaign, of course, money isn't everything. We saw that with Howard Dean. However, as any candidate will tell you, money can do quite a few things for you. For example, it allows candidates to buy ads and, as they say, get their message out. Barack Obama is already spending some of the money that he's been able to raise. He went up last week with ads in Iowa.
Stress may give you a pot belly. Studies of mice and monkeys show a combination of repeated stress and a high-fat, high-sugar diet releases a hormone that causes a buildup of abdominal fat. Manipulating that hormone could melt it. This is ABC News.
Another how-to half-minute from the Home Depot.
Have you checked the forecast for this weekend?
Yeah, the dining room's turning from mostly drab to sunny yellow.
Oh.
And the bathroom will be a mix of warm blue and white accents.
Nothing changes the outlook for your weekend and the whole look of your home, like $6 off 1 gallon cans and $25 off 5 gallon buckets of Behr paint by mail-in rebate. Now at the Home Depot.
Well, I guess that means we're painting, huh?
Here's your brush.
You can do it. We can help. Valid through July 7th in U.S. only. Void where prohibited. See store for details.
If you have diabetes, then you know your meter is your lifeline. Luckily for you, new meters are more accurate and are easier to use. And the best news is, with our new alternate site meters, you don't have to prick your fingers anymore. And if you're covered by Medicare, Access Diabetic Supply will send you one of these new meters at no cost to you.
800-869-8538. 800-869-8538. 800-869-8538.
Two big movies are opening this weekend, and ABC's Bill Deal tells us one is a romantic comedy.
Robin Williams plays a priest in License to Wed.
Someone once said, marriage is bliss. That someone probably wasn't married.
Mandy Moore is Sadie, who is newly engaged to Ben. Reverend Frank puts the couple through a bizarre pre-marriage prep course.
This isn't mandatory, right?
Let's just say we strongly advise it.
In other words,
You have no choice.
Who are you again?
Reverend Frank's my mentor.
There's little Mensa.
What was it like playing a priest, Robin?
First of all, I'm a Protestant. My people don't believe in the whole celibacy thing. We believe that confession involves a gin and tonic on Thanksgiving.
I'm going to have to heal you.
We have got to pray, yeah!
Bill Deal, ABC News.
We have got to pray.
He really did do his own diehard stunts, and Bruce Willis says he was thinking exactly what his character John McClane said just before jumping out of a car at 35 miles an hour. I don't think this is a very good idea. Die Hard opened in second place. Ratatouille was first. I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
It's time for another WGNU local report. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news this morning, a state representative from South St. Louis is stepping down, but hopes his replacement will share his last name. Representative Fred Kratke, whose district includes the Hill and Lindenwood neighborhoods, has resigned. His wife, Michelle, who hopes to fill the vacant seat, confirmed the resignation Friday at City Hall. Fred Kratke was hired this spring as executive vice president of the St. Louis Association of Realtors. His wife worked there as a lobbyist until Friday. Kratke would have been prevented from running for re-election by term limits. Missouri Governor Matt Blunt will set a special election to fill the remainder of the term. The Democratic nominee in that election will be selected by the city's Democratic committee. Michelle Kratke has an advantage in that her husband is a member of that committee. And in other news, St. Louis County Police hope an accident-free 4th of July will be the result of their special holiday enforcement program. Fireworks violations will be the primary focus of patrol officers, along with strict enforcement of traffic safety laws. Patrol officers will also be alert for curfew ordinance and liquor law violations. St. Louis County Police Chief Jerry Lee says the well-being of our citizens and their property is our top priority. Special enforcement has been successful in past years because we've received cooperation from the community. He adds to use common sense and act responsibly to prevent personal tragedy during the holiday. And that's another WGNU local report. I'm Peyton Colston for AM 920.
5 1/2 minutes past 7 o'clock. I'm Charles Gear with this WGNU traffic report. An overturned vehicle still affecting westbound I-70 just past Mid Rivers Mall Drive. Other than that, not very much to report. The traditional rash of road construction and road adjustments. Nothing new to report. We're tacking on the bridges here as we're talking. But bridges appear to be normal at this time, which is probably a very good thing. Kind of quiet for the Monday in the 4th of July week. Taking a look at our WGNU forecast through the 4th of July. Today sunny with a high in the mid-80s. Tonight clear with the low in the mid-60s. And for Tuesday, mostly sunny conditions with a high around 90. Partly cloudy on Tuesday night, the low in the lower 70s. For the 4th itself, cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms. The high in the lower 90s on Wednesday during the daylight hours. And the low in the 70s at night. Last check, 62 degrees at AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you. And speaking of some serious discussion.
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. Do you still think that Saddam Hussein had something to do with the attack on the Twin Towers on 9/11? Listen to my 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. segment, and you'll be clear. 2 years ago, I interviewed William Rodriguez, the head of the maintenance at the Twin Towers on 9/11. And what he saw, and what he heard, and what he felt will chill you to the bone. Take a listen this morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. And I'll be back on Friday. Enjoy and stay strong. Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how do you feel? I think I'm hearing revolution.
have peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me. Below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, and we are really bringing you an amazing story about what really happened on 9/11, and what really happened through the eyes of a man, the eyes and the ears of a man who was there on 9/11. And the eyes of a reporter that has been following this and pulling this together. And I just want to say, for those of you that had the opportunity to catch the last hour, as an attorney, I have, I don't know that I've ever heard of a person able to articulate and to describe and to be as amazing in their detail of recounting a story, and as a human being, I don't know that I've heard of a more heroic actions than those that were engaged in by William Rodriguez, who is joining us from New York City. But there's more of the story to tell. There's the story William and Greg have told us about an explosion that took place in the basement of the North Tower. Greg and William have told us about explosions and mysteries on the way up the North Tower. There's more to this story, and we have to continue this. We've extended our interview to this hour, And I want to welcome back Greg Szymanski, a reporter, the American Free Press and Arctic Beacon, joining us from L.A. Greg, welcome back.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. And William Rodriguez, good morning and welcome back. William.
Hello,
yes,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, William.
Okay.
Welcome
Thank
back.
You for your words, and you humbled me more with that description of what we just spoke about. It's really been an emotional journey, not only of the problems that we had, but at the same time, if you recall going back to that time, talking about the first couple of months after 9/11, about the, you know, after I was pulled from the rubble, I did countless of interviews, CNN, well, all the national networks, they covered the story, and I said my story unedited that day. But then I realized that as time went by, everybody started changing the story.
You mean they started taking it out? They started taking your story out?
Yeah, they started taking the parts of the explosion. They were just putting what it was practically what they wanted to put on the networks. And I figure, because I work on several shows before, I was a magician, so I did many television shows as a magician in my earlier years. I understood that they have a time constraint. So I figure it was editing because of the time. But as it happened continuously, but at the same time I noticed that the Latino press all over the world was putting my statement unedited because it was such a compelling story that they didn't want to even dare to touch it, to even change a word. They will put the story as it was all over the world in Spanish, but it was not crossing over in English. And I said, oh, my God, this is too strange. And as time passed by, we organized automatically after 9/11, due to the amount of media attention that I was getting, the first family group, which was the Hispanic victims group, and then we did the victim support group. And as you may recall, we went to Congress to ask for an official investigation of what happened on 9/11.
If I could just interrupt you just for 1 second, because before we get to after the explosion, I want to go back, because let me get to Greg here just for 1 second, William.
Okay,
William described this. William, what floor was that you heard noises on that you weren't?
34th floor.
Greg, what do you make of that?
Well, here's the interesting thing about William's story is that you got to look at this thing from what's happened in America. The government has always told everybody in this country, I mean, everybody outside of those who may be listening to alternative media sources, very few people, that the jet fuel from that plane caused this massive building to fall. Now, if you listen to William's testimony and to the other people that verify him, three other people that I've listened to tapes to, not only the 14 people that were in that room with William on sub-level one, there was a massive explosion seconds prior to the plane hitting. Now, what is that all about? Now, you would think if the 9/11 Commission was serious about finding out the truth, they would haul in every one of these people and meticulously investigate this. And not only meticulously investigate these people, but hundreds of other people that were probably in that building that heard the same thing. There were many people down there. Mr. Jim Bunko talks about looking through the elevator when it stalled and watching people screaming and running between B2 and B2 or B3. Now, why didn't they even bother to investigate this? Well, here's what happened. They didn't talk to Giambanco, Sanchez, or the other people. They did pull Mr. Rodriguez into the 9/11 Commission in 2004, but they pulled him in behind closed doors. And then, after that, after he told his testimony, his name wasn't even in the report. Now, do you think the media would ever question that? Well, here's what happened after that. NBC calls Mr. Rodriguez after the 9/11 Commission hearings, and says, Mr. Rodriguez, we're going to send over a crew. So Dan Pasternak, the head of NBC Investigations, sends a crew over. They film him for 8 hours, and then never run the film at all. Now, I called Pasternak And I asked him, I said, well, what happened? He said, well, it wasn't the focus. There was nothing new. That wasn't the focus of our story.
They filmed him for 8 hours?
And never ever aired 1 second of what he said.
Well, that's a lot of time. That's an awful lot of time for a media company like that to take that much time and show nothing.
And then the New York Times, on top of that, over the years since Mr. Rodriguez originally told his story, which I might add never has changed from day one, they have either taken his story and manipulated it. So when he told them about the bombs, it never appeared in the paper, or never ran his story. And when a book was written by two reporters named Kevin Flynn and Jim Dwyer called 102 Minutes, The Real Survivor Story, when Mr. Rodriguez told the entire story to them, he was never, ever put in the book. The story about the survivors, without Mr. Rodriguez, to me, is an incomplete account of what happened that morning. And mysteriously, when I called Mr. Flynn, the reporter for the Times, and asked him why, all he could say was that, you know, basically, first of all, they didn't want to comment. NBC and the Times officially will not comment, saying they do not comment in their news and gathering when I wrote the story about this. And Flynn gives this flimsy excuse that, you know, something, we just had so much, and even sent an email to Mr. Rodriguez. Mr. Flynn basically said to me he doesn't want to talk to a third party about this, to have Mr. Rodriguez call. Mr. Rodriguez was upset, didn't want to call, but finally wrote him an email and got a response like this. You know, there was so much material, we didn't have room for you.
And
he's a national hero.
William, you are a national hero. Talk to us about, what do you think? What you heard on the 34th floor?
Well, personally, like I said, I knew it was an empty floor. It was a hollowed out floor that when a company moves out from the World Trade Center, they take everything down to the bare walls. And there's no floor, there's no carpeting, there's no walls, sheet rock or anything like that. It was totally empty. What I heard was heavy equipment, like a dumpster with steel wheels being moved around, that kind of sound. And it was very strange, and I got scared.
Were you surprised that you got scared? I mean, were you surprised that you felt fear?
Yes, I was surprised that I felt fear, because from the whole ordeal, I never for once was afraid of what was going to happen to me, because I was so busy thinking about everybody else. It was a total displacement of personality. But at that moment, I was like, oh, my God, what is that noise? And I knew it was an empty floor, and nobody was there.
Because the
fire department and the police officer was on the 27th floor, and I was alone. Because they all collapsed on the floor, remember, and I continued going up by myself, opening doors and letting people out. And the people on the 33rd floor, there was a lady that, you know, I tried to make the story a little shorter, but there was a lady trembling on the floor that she didn't even know where the exits were. That gives you another idea of how bad it was, the training drills in the building. They only did training drills twice a year. That's really bad for a building that was a city within a city and with over close to 70,000 workers there. The amount of turnaround of people coming and leaving was a constant. So they should have a mandatory training for everybody that worked in the building, and it wasn't like that. So this lady, I found her later on, and I didn't want to make it too graphical for your listener, but when I came out, I found her cut in half, and is the only body that I recognize. And apparently she came out and said, oh, my God, I saved myself, and a piece of glass from the top of the building went down with such a force that practically cut her in half. But anyway, on that moment, I put her on the stairwell, and there were people coming down. I say, take her out. And she was trembling. She had no shoes either. And that's when I heard this kind of strange movement. And I said, no, this is wrong. I remember I have the master key. So what I did was I did not even dare opening the door. I bypassed that floor, and I continued to the upper floors.
Now, Mr. Rodriguez, you were pulling body parts out. You were rescuing people. You were diving in and saving people. That scared you so much that you couldn't open that door.
That is correct. That is correct. It was such a sense of something was wrong there, but at the same time, I didn't even want to concentrate on what was there. I said, no, I'm not even going to open the door. I continued to the other floors because I was so desperate of getting the most amount of people in the less amount of time possible because I didn't know what was happening. Besides, I never expected the building to collapse.
Mm.
Nobody did.
Mm.
And so, you know, it was a strange feeling. So you have to follow your heart,
mm-hmm.
that it was something wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. And that's why it stayed second by second that day in my mind. I will not, how can I say, it has not gone through the metamorphosis of a survival story that 2 or 3 years after it start changing facts. No, it has stayed so clear because I have lived this every single day. And besides being one of the leaders of the families, I've been asked this story over and over and over, so it's never been a time for me to elaborate something different. So it's, in a way, been a catharsis as a survivor, but at the same time, it's been crucial so I could see where the problems were and where the changes have been made on the facts. And on top of that, the reality that knowing that, you know, there's so much information that was not actually put up for the public to actually digest. And we asked our family members when the commission was created, and I'm sorry I jumped to the 9/11 commission, is because we asked so many questions. We created a family steering committee, and we would never get the answers that we wanted.
Do the families, if I may interrupt just for a moment, right. Mr. Rodriguez, are the families upset that the 9/11 commission is not investigating the explosions that you told them about?
The families not only upset, they are tired. Families have had to deal with so much problems, not only because of the investigation, but dealing with their post-traumatic shock disorder, the problems with the family members, the breaking up of families. There's a big story behind 9/11 that we haven't talked about, and people haven't even explored, of all the problems that it has created in terms of the society. And it has been too much for them to digest. Are they tired constantly? Remember, they have been made, at least here in the United States, 9/11 is an everyday talk.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we have gone through has been because of 9/11. I just came back from a speaking tour through Europe, the Jimmy Walters speaking tour. This philanthropist put together this group of experts, and we went all over Europe, and would you believe that it was the first time, Liz, that I felt that I was actually being listened to correctly, that the people were more aware of what was going here than we do when we hear, they say, you know, we're getting the news undiluted, and you guys are getting something different. And we don't believe, and I ask the same question every country that we went to. We went to Vienna, Rome, Amsterdam, Paris, Madrid, London, and we ask the same question. Do you believe the official story of 9/11? And everybody said no. We couldn't find one single person that said yes. And this is Europe. And here, people are taking it for granted. People are, oh, well, they did an investigation, and that's the end of it. No, it's not the end of it, because it was a hodgepodge. It was actually something that we did not expect that it was going to be manipulated that way. When you have stories, and I'm not talking about my story alone, and I don't want to be put myself as the image of all the survivors of what happened on 9/11, it happens that nobody else is talking about it. And the problem here is very simple, is that the 9/11 commission did not take in consideration the survivor stories. They put one or two and that was it. They
just
spoke to the people that were there.
And
they were so much busy concentrating on the head of the fire department, the head of the police department, the head of the EMS. Of course they're going to do something different because they have to protect the department interest. When you have the people that were there that give you a different account, that's why you should go and investigate.
Yeah, well, that's
I
why you
have to fight.
All right, and I
to
have
to be on the commission.
We have to take a break, William. I'm talking to Mr. William Rodriguez. I'm talking to Greg Seismansky. We're talking about what really happened on 9/11. I'm Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. We're going to take a break, you know, and please don't forget that you can always, if you have missed this hour, why don't you pick it up at whiterosesociety.org. If you want somebody to hear this story, get on over to whiterosesociety.org, download this story, pass it on. Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is their attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong. Place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at Connect Care want you to know that sometimes change can be good. Connect Care, still connected to the community. Connect Care is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of Connect Care's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At Connect Care, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At Connect Care, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Just a reminder, you're listening to a special edition of the Morning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Liz will have more details in just a matter of moments. We have a few more messages and a traffic update for you, then we'll return.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. I'd like to introduce to you one of my customers, Joe Scoggins. Mr. Scoggins, how long ago did we work on your property?
It was approximately 8 to 9 years ago, Mr. Persons.
Okay. Have you had any problems with your roof since that time?
Well, actually, about 3 weeks ago, I called you, and there was some water damage that was caused as a result of the storm last fall.
Okay.
And you were out the following day to do the repair work. And it was done in such a professional way that I would recommend you to any and everyone.
So how much did we charge you?
It was free, and it was done within a matter of 3 hours.
All right.
So I called you one day, and you were out the very next day, you and your son and his assistant, and you went up on the roof, and you accomplished the task within a matter of 3 hours.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. Our service starts when we complete your roof. Our number is 361-7127. You can call us day or night. 361-7127.
People, have you heard about Golden Grocer Natural Market? It's locally owned and operated for over 30 years and serving and meeting your health needs by ensuring the best quality and selection in vitamin supplements and organic groceries. Golden Grocer Natural Market has the largest loose herb selection around. You can also get your grains and natural beauty items as well. Their staff is friendly, knowledgeable, and committed to helping you on your journey to improved and enhanced health. Golden Grocer believes that the healthiest goal is achieving balance in every area of your life. So, live your life like it's golden, and let Golden Grocer help you along the way. Golden Grocer, Natural Market, 335 North Euclid, right there in the Central West End. Open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 12 to 5. Golden Grocer, 367-0405. That's 367-0405.
Are you an inventor, or do you know an inventor who would like to attempt to have an invention or idea patented and submitted to industry? Well, for free information on how to proceed, call this toll-free number.
Call 800-346-9966.
InventHelp, one of America's largest invention companies, has inventor information you can have for free. Record your invention's date of origination, plus get an information brochure and other materials of interest to new inventors. Learn how to get this free information just by calling this toll-free number.
Call 800-346-9966. That's 1-800-346-9966.
Even if you have an idea for improving an existing product and don't know where to go with it, you'll want this free inventor's information. It shows how InventHelp may assist you in trying to patent your invention and submit it to industry. So call InventHelp right now, toll free.
Call 800-346-9966. That's 1-800-346-9966.
And as promised, at 7:35, a look at WGNU traffic. An injury accident reported on northbound 55 at Lindbergh. Another accident to report, eastbound 40 at Mason Road. On westbound 70, the accident has been cleared past Mid Rivers Mall Drive. And approaching the bridges, Illinois 3 is flowing freely to the Poplar Street Bridge. The King Bridge is normal between the Illinois Bank and Laclede's Landing. And westbound 70 at the Poplar Street Bridge, a little bit slow, but not too bad, all things considered. And on 270 northbound, stop and go between Gravois and Marshall Road. Westbound, no problems on 270 between Illinois 3 and Interstate 170. 64 degrees at AM 920 WGNU, sunny skies today with a high expected around 90 degrees, or 80 in the upper 80s actually, and the low tonight in the 60s. And let's join Liz for a reminder about what's coming up in just a matter of moments here on AM 920. Good reason to stick around on this Monday morning for more of the best of the wake-up call.
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is their attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong. The what really happened on 9/11, William? I'd like to come back to you and talk about what did you tell the 9/11 Commission, and did they seem interested at all in the explosions that you talked about coming from the basement?
when I spoke to the man behind the closed doors of the 9/11 Commission was at their office here in New York at the Federal Building, and
did they tell you why you had to speak behind closed doors?
No.
Were you surprised that you?
And actually, no, I wasn't surprised. I wasn't surprised at all, because they were actually looking for another guy that was the one that did the public addressing system on the building for people to go back into the offices. They say they lost this guy, and for 2 years they were looking for him. I said, you know, if you could have called me, I would have gave you the number. Well, very easy to find.
But they knew enough. They knew enough to have you
do the homework.
They knew enough to have you behind closed doors. They knew
actually, the funny thing is when the 9/11 Commission came to New York for the hearings, I publicly said that, you know, you haven't heard the whole story. And as one of the members that went to Congress for having the commission created, I demanded the right to be listened to the testimony. And they got all nervous, and they say, yes, we're going to contact you. And within a day or two, they contacted me. And they did the appointment at their office with the investigators, tape recorders, and everything. The funny thing is that the focus was that I was the person that 3 months prior saw one of the hijackers in the building, and I identified one of the hijackers was Mohammad Al-Jahiri. And I was actually cleaning the bathrooms on the weekends, because that was the overtime for me, at the World Trade Center mezzanine level. And this guy comes running, not running, comes walking into the bathroom area. The gate was down, and he asked me how many public bathrooms were in the building. And I started telling him, well, you have the one at the Sparrow restaurant, you have the one downstairs, and I pinpointed the bathrooms. And I said, well, I'm almost finished, you can use this one. And he said, no, thank you. He turns around and leaves. He has a very big accent, and I should know about accents because I have one. And the guy looked exactly like Ringo Starr. So he stayed in my, and I have a photographic memory. I must tell you that automatically I called my supervisor and I told him, and I told one of the Port Authority supervisors called Ed Raggio, and I said, Ed, this just happened to me. And he was the top guy for the Port Authority there. And he said, oh, don't worry, we always get these nut jobs around here. But the guy turned around and left the building.
And he looked
so
like Ringo Starr.
I called the 9/11, when they had the Family Assistance Center on Pier 92 set up, I went to the FBI table. I said, listen, I need to talk to you, and this is what happened. And I told them all the information, and I even told them, listen, I even still have the radio in my pocket that I had at the World Trade Center, and he says, Port Authority Police. This belonged to maybe one of the dead police officers, and I have the radio. You got to pick it up. Actually, I had the radio for 4 months in my house. Nobody picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that moment, I told them that, you know, this guy was there. So he said, well, that's the investigators. They were very interested in that, and they got very angry to the towards me, but towards the FBI. He said, how can this information was never passed on? And now, remember, these are investigators for the 9/11 Commission. Now, they are actually doing the job, the dirty job, but they don't have the final say of what goes on the report or what has to be investigated. They're just gathering the information. And they said, wow, here we have proof of the only eyewitness proof that one of the hijackers was staking out the building inside. Number two, that they have an alternate plan to maybe put bombs inside. This is not coming from me, it's coming from them. Maybe put bombs inside the bathrooms to accelerate the building collapse. Not, again, not coming from me. And because it's easy. In the bathroom, the public bathrooms, after the 1993 bombing, the World Trade Center went to $250 million, upgrade of the whole systems and the whole area complex to actually make it more secure because of the bombing. $136 million were spent only on security.
Mm.
So the only area that you did not need an ID and you could come up from anywhere on the street were the public bathrooms. So you could go and plant a bomb, come under the stall, get out, close the door, and that's it, and leave. And you could put any bombs there very easily. I tell you this, Liz, because a lot of people say, well, how did they have the opportunity if it was bumped to go in there and plant them? I said, well, I give you an example. This is an example. Very easy.
Did anybody, any investigative person, the 9/11 Commission, the FBI, the police department, the fire department, did anybody have an extended conversation with you about the explosion in the basement?
Nobody. Nobody. Practically on all the commissions, hearings, I've been speaking out. And it's like, you know, deaf ears. But again, you know, it's surprising because it gets to the point that I said, okay, well, you know, it's like your song, beautiful song that you just played. And you say, you know, you just, sometimes I don't know what I'm fighting for.
Sure.
But in reality, I know what I'm fighting for. I'm fighting for the truth. And because, like Greg said before, I owe it to the memory of my friends. I lost 200 friends. And I need to be the voice for those people. And, you know, these people want me to shut up.
And, Greg, you're a reporter. How many people, how many stories have referenced Mr. Rodriguez's statement about the bomb or the explosion in the basement?
Well, here's the interesting thing, that the mainstream media, and we're talking about the New York Times, all the TV stations, all the major papers, and bar none, Chicago Tribune, you go right across the country, and there has been a blackout. Anytime Mr. Rodriguez has ever spoken over the years, even after the 9/11 Commission, the papers have not printed his name or that story or the corroborating evidence that there may be an explosion or the fact that the 9/11 Commission may have not even investigated this. Now, when you look and talk to some of these people, I had a chance to talk to the people in NBC, had a chance to talk to the people at the New York Times.
And they don't know me by name.
And I asked them why, and they give me an answer like, we do not comment on our news gathering. The reporters and even the head investigative reporter for NBC, or Dan Pasternak, is very evasive. They do not want to get at the truth. They don't want to tell me why they don't do this story. And I asked them basically, as a journalist, how can you ignore this? How can you, as a journalist, wake up in the morning and ignore these facts? Now, when I started writing about Mr. Rodriguez and putting these stories in, I was amazed. I said, you know something? 4 years after the fact, nobody knows about this. The media is covering it up. The government's covering it up. And they're expecting everyone to believe that their story is true. Well, something's rotten. And this story proves it. And, I mean, there's so many other things that are inconsistent in 9/11, but William's story is the one that should wake up America, should wake up everybody and go, listen, we need answers.
But why do you suppose, Greg, that the government so there was a bomb in the basement of the building. What does that mean?
Well, if they were forthright, hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
If they're...
Hello?
I think we lost him.
Did we lose him? Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
But I could answer that question.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. If they actually corroborate that, just that part, it will bring the whole official story down to pieces, because then the whole theatricals that they put together will come practically dissolve into nothing, because then the whole thing about the towers, the $30 million that they spent to do this investigation, the other $30 million for the NIST investigation of what the towers collapsed, they all come to practically nothing. And how are they going to explain that to the American public? How are they going to explain that to the families? And on top of that, we hated the family members and the survivors that we were politicized automatically.
Yes.
After 9/11, they went into two wars, and they start selling the story that 9/11 in the beginning was the cost for the war in Iraq.
Mm.
It did not have to do anything. We knew, the family members knew, by the way, and we were being used, and we said no. And what we did, we put all the widows on different television programs to do the same. We learned the same techniques. They're going to use us, we're going to use them. we start putting the emotional part, because who's going to contest an emotional part of a widow or a mother that lost her son? So we put them on networks, and they have to change the story. Now it's weapons of mass destruction. But they wanted to do it about 9/11.
And I said no.
And
we have to take a quick break. I'm talking to Mr. William Rodriguez and Greg Seismansky, a reporter with the American Free Press and Arctic Beacon. Mr. Rodriguez is joining us from New York City. Mr. Seismansky is joining us from L.A. I'm Liz Brown. You don't want to miss this. And if you want to pass the story on, please get on over to WhiteRoseSociety.org. You really need to push this story, pass the story on, folks. I'm Liz Brown, and this is the Wake-Up Call. Place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% of the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. I'd like to introduce to you one of my customers, Joe Scoggins. Mr. Scoggins, how long ago did we work on your property?
It was approximately 8 to 9 years ago, Mr. Persons.
Okay, have you had any problems with your roof since that time?
Well, actually, about 3 weeks ago, I called you, and there was some water damage that was caused as a result of the storm last fall.
Okay.
And you were out the following day to do the repair work, and it was done in such a professional way that I would recommend you to any and everyone.
So how much did we charge you?
It was free, and it was done within a matter of 3 hours.
All right.
So I called you one day, and you were out the very next day, you and your son and his assistant, and you went up on the roof, and you accomplished the task within a matter of 3 hours.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. Our service starts when we complete your roof. Our number is 361-7127. You can call us day or night. 361-7127.
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the Wake-Up Call. Today I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is their attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, and my guest this morning, reporter with the American Free Press and Arctic Beacon, Greg Seismansky. Good morning. Welcome back, Greg.
Yes.
And Mr. William Rodriguez. Greg, you were just about to tell us why you thought the government, what the government would lose if we investigated these explosions at the basement of the North Tower on 9/11, and then
well,
we were cut off.
What it simply will do is open up a can of worms they don't want to even get into. And the reason they don't want to get into it is that their story basically is this, that the jet fuel brought down the towers, and that's the end of it. 19 Arab terrorists brought the whole defense system of America to its knees. Well, you know, the story if you look into it, gets flimsier and flimsier and flimsier. But the one real key issue is that if you can pinpoint one area that's undisputable in defeating their story, then everything else will fall like a house of cards. And I think they realize that this is a pre-scripted 9/11. They had this script written prior to that, and Mr. Rodriguez trying to fit in with the truth doesn't fit into their script. Now, the one interesting thing about this is that ask yourself this question. If they're telling the truth, why did FEMA haul away all the crime scene evidence before anybody could investigate it and ship it overseas? And that's another point that points to a possible, not a possible cover-up, but a cover-up of what really went on. You had Mr. Rodriguez's story and stories of countless other people who heard explosions below. You will find that it was impossible for that to occur from the airplane 90 floors above. Mr. Rodriguez talks about going up those flights of stairs. And he, if, like the government contends, that this was jet fuel that seeped down into those elevators within seconds, he would have never been able to get up through those floors.
And he wasn't the only one going up.
No, there were many people even on those elevators. I mean, the story does not ring true one bit. And they know that if he tells this story and if it is investigated properly, their story basically doesn't hold water.
Mr. Rodriguez, you filed you are the lead plaintiff in a RICO suit against George W. Bush, this administration, because of 9/11. Why are you a lead plaintiff? Why did you file this lawsuit, and why is this suit important? We have about four more minutes here.
Number one, because nobody else dared to do it. Number two, because the truth is not out. Number three, because they have proof that there's illegal enrichment by the president because of Halliburton and everybody else's connection with the families for the last 30 years. Attorney Phil Burke, who is actually representing me on this lawsuit, we went to court, and they sent a lawyer from the president's side to try to dismiss the case, and they couldn't because the facts were there. And they said that, you know, as a survivor, I didn't have the right to sue the president because I probably received money from the Federal Compensation Fund. So it was a buyout, as they didn't know that I never received any compensation fund from the government at all, and actually denied that right because I knew it was a buyout. And so, you know, that's one. The people can actually read the whole lawsuit at 911forthetruth.com, where they can get the actual motions and the answer from the president's office, lawyers, actually, and they can draw their own conclusions. And also, I'm actually going to be on this Sunday in Los Angeles talking about this at the Met Theater. So people, if they want to hear the whole story, they can go over there. What we are trying to do, Liz, is actually talk to anybody that will listen. And I actually ask you a favor, that if anybody wants to contact me, they can do it through you. They can actually go to your website and post any questions that they will have, because we will actually answer everybody. We actually want the people to know what happened, and we are trying to put together a national tour of what happened on 9/11, so people like universities, colleges, and churches will give this information to the people, to the American people, so they will know what was the experience all about. So I call up on everybody that is interested to actually try to contact us.
Is there one single elected official, Mr. Rodriguez, that is interested in your story?
Oh, many, 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 many. We cannot name them, but they are actually going against the status quo, and it's very difficult for them because they're part of the machinery. And they say, we're going to run into these different walls. And they tell me exactly the walls that they're going to run into. And remember, the government, you have to go through the Senate, to the legislature, all the way down to the, all the way up to the president to actually get something approved. And they tell me all the hurdles and problems that they will go through. So they tell me, you know, the best way, me on the position of the politician, I cannot do anything.
Have you talked to Congressman John Conyers?
No.
I would talk to him. I would talk to him. And before we go, we have 30 seconds here. Greg, can you please give people your website so that they can get to more of this information?
Yeah, you can read all these stories and continuing stories on my website, which is www.arcticvision.com. Beacon. That's ARCTICBEACON.com. And you can read the ongoing stories of William Rodriguez and other stories regarding what I consider to be a cover-up of 9/11 in the highest proportions and something that we as Americans need to get the truth. And Mr. Rodriguez is going on his tour, and hopefully that will be one way, because as Bob Kohler of the Tribune said, Tribune Media Online Services, a columnist, he said the government isn't with us, the media isn't with us, it's only us.
There you go. So, I want to thank you both, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
And more to come on the award-winning Wake Up Call, the best of the Wake Up Call, following the news and the traffic at 8 o'clock here on the AM 920.
Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
News is next from the ABC Radio Network and the WGNU Newsroom at 8 o'clock.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Karen Chase. A summer terror spectacular. That's what law enforcement officials warn Al-Qaeda is planning in a new secret report. But Homeland Security Director Michael Chertoff says it doesn't say where, and it would be misleading to suggest there's a credible or specific threat against the U.S.
We know that traditionally they have used high-profile methods of carrying out attacks. So it's not surprising from time to time to have analysts remind us of this fact.
The warning comes as British investigators arrest two more suspects in the weekend's terror attack attempts, bringing the total to seven. ABC's Jim Sciutto tells us investigators have lots of evidence to work with.
Police have established clear links between the attack in Glasgow on Saturday and the failed car bombs in London on Friday. One similarity, both attacks used explosive devices containing gasoline and propane tanks. Police say they have recovered a gold mine of evidence from the captured vehicles and from video surveillance.
Wet weather continues to plague parts of the Midwest. Flooding has forced evacuations in Kansas and Missouri, and ABC's Sam Champion says more rain is forecast and already flood ravaged Texas and Oklahoma.
They're really unbelievable rainfall totals, and they continue from last week into this week. When you're hearing totals like 20 inches of rain, it's really, you just can't even believe it. But again, parts of the country again over the weekend having these rainfall totals.
At the box office, it was the best of times and the worst of times. ABC's Dave Alpert has the numbers.
Ratatouille debuted at number one with over $42 million, but that's the worst opening for a Pixar film in 9 years. In second place, Live Free or Die Hard earned an estimated $33 million. That's the best opening ever for a Bruce Willis movie.
Michael Moore's documentary Sicko was ninth. When it comes to the ingredients of a successful marriage, kids have dropped from number 3 to number 8 in a ranking of importance. Sharing household chores was rated as far more important. A happy sexual relationship was also rated higher. Fidelity was number 1. This is ABC News.
Another how-to half minute from the Home Depot.
Have you checked the forecast for this weekend?
Yeah, the dining room's turning from mostly drab to sunny yellow.
Oh.
And the bathroom will be a mix of warm blue and white accents.
Nothing changes the outlook for your weekend and the whole look of your home, like $6 off 1 gallon cans and $25 off 5 gallon buckets of Behr paint by mail-in rebate. Now at the Home Depot.
Well, I guess that means we're painting, huh?
Here's your brush.
You can do it. We can help. Valid through July 7th in U.S. only. Void where prohibited. See store for details.
No matter where you go this summer, Goodyear gives you the freedom to get there. And now, during the Goodyear Freedom to Get There tire sale, get up to a $50 mail-in cash card with the purchase of a set of 4 select Goodyear tires. Or double your cash card up to $100 when you make the purchase on your Goodyear credit card. Hurry, the Goodyear Freedom to Get There tire sale ends July 21st. For complete details and location nearest you, visit GoodyearTires.com. Certain restrictions and conditions apply. Goodyear credit card purchases subject to credit approval.
Britain paused to remember the People's Princess with the Diana Memorial Concert in London.
I'm not one of those who can easily hide.
A throng of stars graced the stage, including Elton John. Addressing the crowd, Prince William described what the musical extravaganza was all about.
This evening is about all that our mother loved in life, her music,
her dance, her charities, and her family and friends.
The concert date was chosen to mark what would have been Diana's 46th birthday. An estimated global audience of 500 million tuned in. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
Does being with a manlier man make a woman smarter? A new study that found strong evidence of a link between sense of smell and memory also found that female mice generated new brain cells after exposure to dominant males' pheromones. Researchers say the findings could have huge implications for cell regeneration in cases of human brain injury. I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
This WGNU News report sponsored by the Church of the First Born from Above Ministry Training Center. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news, many St. Louis restaurants will soon be able to welcome four-legged guests to dine outside with their human companions. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen gave final approval Friday to allow dogs to dine in the outside eating areas offered by many restaurants. The bill now heads to Mayor Francis Slay, who's publicly supported the concept already. Food regulations currently prohibit live animals from entering eating establishments, even patios and sidewalk cafes. Lida Crewson sponsored the bill. It includes provisions to satisfy critics, prohibiting dogs from causing a mess or disruption. Waterless hand sanitizer must be available, and restaurants reserve the right to ask dogs that exhibit undesirable behavior to leave. The bill also exempts 7 wards whose aldermen ask the restriction to remain in place for their areas. The pet ban will be lifted in the areas of the city where outdoor dining is most popular, including South Grand, Soulard, and the Central West End. And with the exceptions of emergencies and construction already underway, the Orange Cones and Barrels of MoDOT will take a vacation for the Independence Day holiday. For those traveling for July 4th, the Missouri Department of Transportation will try to keep traffic flowing by wrapping up construction sites. They should start closing the afternoon of the 3rd and will stay closed during the holiday. That's WGNU News, sponsored by the Church of the Firstborn from Above Ministry Training Center. Change your perspective. Attend the Shattering Your Strongholds Workshop gala opening at 6 p.m. Monday, July 9th at Knowing Cafe and Books in Jamestown Mall. For information on all their workshops, call 314-929-1274. I'm Peyton Colston for AM 920.
And at 6 minutes after 8 o'clock, Charles Gere with a look at the WGNU traffic and the weather. What Peyton said about the traffic construction may be true for now. There is still some construction in the area, but most of it's taking the holiday off. But that doesn't mean we don't have traffic issues. A disabled vehicle at Lucas and Hunt and eastbound 70 at Lucas and Hunt. The disabled vehicle is in the eastbound lanes. Watch out for that. And Interstate 55 at Lindbergh remains closed due to an accident in the northbound lanes. Taking a look at our WGNU forecast, it's lining up quite nicely for the holiday as well. Sunny today with a high in the mid-80s, clear tonight, the low in the mid-60s, mostly sunny for Tuesday with a high near 90. Partly cloudy Tuesday night, the low in the lower 70s, and wouldn't you know it, the 4th coming up, we have a chance of rain sneaking in on Wednesday and Wednesday night. Cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms with a high in the lower 90s on Wednesday and a low in the lower 70s for Wednesday night. Last check, 68 degrees at Lambert Field and 67 degrees here at AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you. And Liz has something to discuss, to share with you, and something you'll be talking about as well.
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is their attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. My email address is revolution@lizbrown.com. My website is lizbrown.com, LIZZBrown.com. We are talking this morning about firefighters, particularly specifically in the city of St. Louis, but these are issues that impact us all over the country. The state of fire departments all across this country, this issue of race and how it plays itself out in firehouses all across this country. I have a discussion planned for you this hour, a discussion that I don't think has ever taken place in the city of St. Louis, a discussion of this very issue with the president of St. Louis Local Firefighters 73 and Captain Wayne Lester, the vice chairman of fire. Wayne, welcome.
How you doing, Liz?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
It seems fitting that we have a fire alarm going off as we begin our conversation this morning. Paul Davis, president of the Local Firefighter 73, welcome back.
Thank you.
I want to begin, if I may, with you, Wayne. You've had an opportunity to listen to some of the conversation that we've had this morning. And one of the issues that was a concern to me and an issue that presented itself as I looked at the different statistics that exist within the fire department are the numbers of captains and the numbers of chiefs and the numbers of firefighters that have joined the department or have been part of the department after the creation of fire. And what does what in your words or in your observation, how important is it to have an organization like FIRE?
First of all, I want to say thank you to you for having us on and letting us have this discussion. Also to your guests, Joe Hughes in the first hour and Paul the second hour and us together. But most of all, your listeners, for listening and tuning in. One thing that I like to say that I think is very important that FIRE exists, with Joe giving the history of FIRE existence, what happened prior to the existence of FIRE, he painted the picture to let everybody know what was going on. And I don't want to let it be skewed, because even though it was blatant back then, it's just in a different form today.
And in terms of, let's come today, come to today. One of the issues that we've discussed in the last hour was the issue of the transfer policy. And I made the observation that I've never seen anything like this in terms of, and I don't know if any other fire department is facing this across the country, that the chief of the fire department is unable to put a firefighter where the chief of an organization believes that they should be. That's where we are right now. I don't know of any organization that exists in America where the president, the CEO, the head of the organization can't put people where they want to put people. Talk to us about the transfer policy.
I think before I can talk about the transfer policy, I must answer Paul for speaking for me. First of all, he doesn't speak for me in the sense of morale. Mm-hmm. You asked him specifically, does he speak for all firefighters? I have to say personally, my own personal testimony, the lowest point of the morale on my career in the St. Louis Fire Department is when the previous chief was here, Neil Satanics, mm-hmm. when I was transferred every other year. Not only I was transferred, I noticed that the leaders of FIRE was transferred, banished to the airport. So that was the lowest point in my personal career as far as morale on the St. Louis Fire Department. Now, to the transfers,
can we back to the morale? Because also, Paul, you had mentioned that it was low for everybody in the fire department. As the president or the vice chairman of FIRE, there are about 300 and something black firefighters and other workers that are part of the organization. How is morale for black firefighters and EMS workers now?
I think there's a resolved approach in FIRE members. I think that there are an opportunity for them to prosper or seemingly prosper in an even playing field. Mm-hmm. But it seems like once you play by the rules, once you do what's required, then there's another element that's added to the paradigm. And this element is coming outside of the fire department. And when you talk about specifically transfers, you look at the city charter. It specifically gives the appointed authority under Section 8. It says the appointing authority may at any time transfer any classified employee under his jurisdiction from one position to another position in the same class by giving written notice to the director, and that's the director of personnel, not the director of public safety, before the effective date thereof. Transfer of the classified employee from a position under the jurisdiction of one appointing authority to the position under the jurisdiction of another appointing authority may be made within the approval of the director of personnel and the appointing authorities. So what we have is a bigger question here. The chief has been given the ability to transfer by the city charter. Now, the question that should be asked is this administration, talking about the Slay administration, talking about Jeff Rankford, talking about Simon, the director of public safety, are they interfering with this administration and going against the city charter? I think that's the question that needs to be asked. We have a public forum here, but I think that an official forum needs to be researched and delved into this question by the Board of Aldermen. Maybe the Board of Aldermen need to have hearings, official hearings, and ask the question, is this administrative interference, where the appointing authority cannot transfer or run his department? And has it happened anywhere else in the city? We've seen something unprecedented where the appointing authority had to go and hire his own attorney. The city didn't want the city didn't pay for him. Now, he works for the city. He's looking out for city money, city taxpayers, and he stated that.
And we're talking about Chief Sherman George.
Chief Sherman George. the first African-American chief on the St. Louis Fire Department.
And so, Paul, let's you jump in here in terms of the what Local 73 is asking for. You're asking for something, according to what Wayne is saying, that is contrary to the charter of the city of St. Louis. Every other appointing authority has the ability to make transfers, to make decisions that they want to make within their department.
When the fire chief became the fire chief, the director of public safety, Marty Abusi, asked him to provide him with a transfer policy. And the fire chief...
Fire chief are we talking about?
Sherman George. In the standard operating procedures of the St. Louis Fire Department, Section 6.12, that was amended in 1999 or 2000, the fire chief made a transfer policy, and he listed six-page document that lists the procedures that the fire department will live under. The fire chief still has the authority under the city charter to grant him that ability, but the fire chief created the standard operating procedures in which we live under for the transfer process. And in that process, it talks about when there's an opening exists, that opening will be published in every engine house, and people will have the ability to bid on a particular opening. And then it goes on, and then the fire chief will have a committee that will look at the transfer requests come in, and that he will make the appropriate transfers based on the selection criteria outlined in Section 6.12 of the Standard Operating Procedures of the Fire Department. And if you're not following Step 1 and Step 2, you can't jump down to Step 3 that says, for the good of the department, the fire chief can transfer anybody he wants to at any time. That goes against the entire transfer policy.
And Wayne?
Actually, it doesn't. First, to put it in perspective, 73 wanted a transfer policy under the previous chief, Neil Satanics.
Local 73.
And he wouldn't give him one. Mm-hmm. This chief, because of his good nature, because he wanted to involve everybody, allowed a transfer policy. But, of course, he would not take away his own authority. That don't make sense. That's not reasonable. And as the appointing authority, he can at any time do a transfer. Now, what happened was he exercised his authority as the appointing authority and made a transfer list and notified everyone. The director of public safety, Mr. Simon, told him he couldn't transfer. And from my perspective, fire's perspective, it's because of a few local 73 members that are high up in their organization and that have influence with this administration. I think that you all established earlier when you talked about the letter that they put out and who they wanted to vote for. And they said they supported Francis Slay, the mayor of the city of St. Louis. Quite naturally, you don't support someone and not get anything in return. The question is, what are you getting in return? And from our perspective, they're getting administrative interference in return. Anything that 73 wants to do, anything 73 wants to stop, they get from support from above, the chief's head. So what you have is, I guess, a payoff. All right, we'll give you our support, you give us what we want.
Paul.
Again, in the first hour, I spoke about the lack of collective bargaining for public employees in the state of Missouri. The way the collective bargaining process works is we negotiate with our supervisors, with whoever the appointing authority is. And there's give and take. You negotiate. You give a little, I'll give a little, we'll meet somewhere in the middle. With our current administration, with our fire chief, we are not reaching. We are unable to negotiate. He is unwilling to sit down and negotiate with the local on changes in working conditions and on changes in the benefits that we receive. And so, like I stated earlier, if we're not able to get it through the collective bargaining process, we have to do it through the political process.
Let's do a little give, a little take, a little situation. your fire chief wanted to make a policy about hepatitis shots, that he wanted all of the members to have to do this, to be tested for hepatitis. It was hepatitis C, I believe it was. And your organization, and please help me understand this because I certainly don't, your organization opposed this. Your organization did not sit down with the chief to talk about this. He invited them in to have a conversation about this. Your organization had told its members that they shouldn't even come to the discussion meeting about this new policy. Explain to me, to the listening audience, if it's about give a little, take a little, why your organization would be against that type of a policy and why your organization wouldn't even sit down or would tell its members not to come and listen to what was being discussed.
I don't have any knowledge of our organization being against the hepatitis C program.
Can you talk to that?
The International Association of Firefighters has been on the forefront of hepatitis C and other communicable diseases.
Okay.
And this started in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, when a large majority, or not a large majority, when a large population of the firefighters and EMTs and paramedics in Philadelphia contracted hepatitis C. And that is a problem that exists throughout this country.
It's a good policy.
It's an excellent policy.
But Wayne, talk to us about what happened here in the city of St. Louis with that when Sherman George tried to instigate that or to implement that policy.
First of all, let's clear something up. The chief, Chief George, Local 73, and fire meets once a month and discuss issues in the St. Louis Fire Department. They have input on issues. And to my understanding, it's to the directive of his superior, Mr. Simon. He wants to create an atmosphere, from what I see, as a management style where you build consensus where everybody has an input in this management style. Until something happens,
mm-hmm.
then it's the point of the authority's fault.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, why not allow him to run his department? One of the things that the chief did in his way of being innovative and creative, he went out and got a grant from the government, and they came in with hepatitis C testing. And at the time, the local was against it. It was interesting because there was a woman from Philadelphia, I believe it was, or Pennsylvania, a white female that was in the local out there. She came and gave a testimonial how her chief opposed hepatitis C testing and opposed her as an individual because she had contracted it through the job and was fighting her. The film that we saw, the international, was in support of this, but this local wasn't. Now, I'm not telling you something that I heard about. I'll tell you something that I experienced because I was there. I participated in the program. What's interesting is that we're telling folks out here that this is a unique situation. This local is a unique situation. This whole atmosphere in St. Louis is a unique thing. Race is the basis of everything in the decisions that they make. And what I'm telling you is that, yes, I can say that there are black firemen in unions all across this country. But if you look at it, the predominant factor is they're black cities.
Mm-hmm.
They run the locals. This local wants to impose their will on everyone else at the expense of everyone else. If you deal with city people in the government and have them talk to you with this health care thing, it's the same way.
Well, talk to us about specifically about what 73 did about the hepatitis.
They protested. They didn't participate. You had a few that participated. But they spoke out against it. They told their members don't.
And when was this?
This was a few years ago. I think 3 years ago.
So
it didn't cost the city taxpayers a dime.
And this is when Sherman George was the chief.
Yes.
So here we do. We have.
The local did not oppose the hepatitis C. And my company, we went down on a rotating basis throughout the country, and everyone on my company got the hepatitis C shots. Now, if there are individuals, because of religious reasons or because of other reasons, that decided not to get the test, that's fine. You know, but we did not, Local 73 did not go out and stand against hepatitis C.
Wayne.
You didn't march against it like you did everything else, but you did support it. And that's what I'm telling you.
Did not support it.
You did not support it.
And how? And what were some of the things that were done that demonstrated the lack of support from 73 on the hepatitis piece?
The lack of participation. Mm-hmm. I think that the chief himself came in and spoke to each class mm-hmm. and encouraged them to take it, despite the opposition. Because what you're saying is, I'm giving you an opportunity to find out if you have hepatitis C or not. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I had went to a forum for a week, although in Illinois, to fight racism.
And we're going to have to take a break real quick here. I'm talking to Captain Wayne Lester, Vice Chairman of FIRE, Paul Davis, President of St. Louis Local Firefighters, Local 73. And also when we come back, too, because, again, this whole spirit of cooperation, let's talk about the pumpers issue as well, adding paramedics to the pumpers when we come back. This is Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call. We'll be back. Stay with us. About Golden Grocer Natural Market? It's locally owned and operated for over 30 years and serving and meeting your health needs by ensuring the best quality and selection in vitamin supplements and organic groceries. Golden Grocer Natural Market has the largest loose herb selection around. You can also get your grains and natural beauty items as well. Their staff is friendly, knowledgeable, and committed to helping you on your journey to improved and enhanced health. Golden Grocer believes that the healthiest goal is achieving balance in every area of your life. So, live your life like it's golden, and let Golden Grocer help you along the way. Golden Grocer, Natural Market, 335 North Euclid, right there in the Central West End. Open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 12 to 5. Golden Grocer, 367-0405. That's 367-0405.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. I'd like to introduce to you one of my customers, Joe Scoggins. Mr. Scoggins, how long ago did we work on your property?
It was approximately 8 to 9 years ago, Mr. Persons.
Okay, have you had any problems with your roof since that time?
Well, actually, about 3 weeks ago, I called you, and there was some water damage that was caused as a result of the storm last fall.
Okay.
And you were out the following day to do the repair work. And it was done in such a professional way that I would recommend you to any and everyone.
So how much did we charge you?
It was free, and it was done within a matter of 3 hours.
All right.
So I called you one day, and you were out the very next day, you and your son and his assistant, and you went up on the roof, and you accomplished the task within a matter of 3 hours.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. Our service starts when we complete your roof. Our number is 361-7127. You can call us day or night. 361-7127.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
More to come on this special edition, The Best of the Morning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Right here on AM 920 WGNU.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black owned and black operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% of the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Coming up on 8:34 at AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you. Traffic matters right now. And they are working with, and in fact have just cleared, that accident on northbound 55 at Lindbergh. There is an accident, however, to report at Hanley and Eager Road in Mid-County. And the congestion seems to have cleared from Highway 141 and Highway 64, US 40. Take your choice on both. However, some construction is on the way. The right lane of the, let's see, eastbound 40, the right lane of eastbound 4064, is shut down for road work between South 18th and the Poplar Street Bridge. Currently 69 degrees here at AM 920 WGNU. 67, the latest reading from Lambert Field. The forecast calls for sunny skies, the high near 90 today. Some rain could be sneaking into the forecast for the 4th of July. And if you're just joining us, this is a special edition of the Wake Up Call, and Liz, you can explain it a lot better than I can.
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the Wake Up Call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is their attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I am here. This is Liz Brown. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. Our email is revolution@lizbrown.com. We are discussing fire department issues. We are discussing the issue of race in the fire department. I'm here with Captain Wayne Lester. He's the vice chair of fire, and Paul Davis. He's the president of the St. Louis Firefighters Local 73. And Wayne, we were on our way out. We were talking about the issue of race in the hepatitis program, and also I'd like to talk about the pumpers as well.
It was very, just quickly, the because of the program, I went to a conference, and there was a member of 73 there, a white female. She found out that she was exposed to hepatitis C, and she came to me and told me that she had been exposed, and I was there to support her and help her. Through that program, she found out that she was taking it home to her family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the program and the chief's foresight in this that he made it available to the members of the fire department.
Mm-hmm. And there was opposition from Local 73?
For whatever reason.
Okay, so let's talk about other, because Paul, we had talked about the whole give and take, the what is happening here with the fire department. One of the things that you had said, or you made reference to, Paul, was the issue of that we want to put the issue of race behind us and start dealing with the issues directly. Is it possible to put race behind us, to not let race impact on these decisions when the organization that you represent is an organization that exists or that consists solely or the overwhelming majority of people? You have 10 black members and about what is it, 450 people. You have about 10 black members. Is it possible for your organization to put race aside? I mean, is it possible to put race aside when your organization engages in issues that have race involved in them and the decision making?
I don't believe any organization in this country is going to be able to put race behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Race is going to be an issue that people discuss.
Well, then let me ask
you. We can have differences, and what we need to understand, and what I believe we understand, is that sometimes it's okay to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
But we learned on the St. Louis Fire Department. We learned in May of 2002 that the fire that we fight on a daily basis does not discriminate. In May of 2002, we lost two firefighters here in the city of St. Louis, an African-American firefighter and a white firefighter. That's our enemy. And if we go in and we fight at a fire, and we've got each other's back, and if Wayne goes down, whoever's behind him is going to pick him up. And if I go down, whoever is going to pick me up. Or if I see someone go down, I'm going to pick them up. And we do this on a daily job, and we risk our lives. And in Rob and Derek's case, they gave their lives for this job. And so if we can do that in a life-threatening environment, then we ought to be able to get past the differences and start having a discussion about the differences so that we can reach some consensus.
Do you see, Wayne, that the organization Local 73 is moving past the issues of race? I mean, that's fabulous. I mean, that fire doesn't discriminate, God doesn't discriminate, lightning doesn't discriminate, but people discriminate and organizations discriminate. Do we have those types of actions happening with the Local 73?
It's interesting that he would mention Derek and Rob. I remember, and incidentally, Derek and Rob was at the same engine house I'm at,
mm-hmm.
Engine House 1. We had a service for them there, and Fire made Rob a honorary member. We gave a scholarship to his kids.
Rob is a white firefighter.
Right, Rob Morrison. We also got plaques and citations from our international, and they made him an honorary member. In the same ceremony, Local 73 presented plaques and presented it just to Rob's wife and not to Derek's wife. Which was not only hurtful and disingenuous, but it was, I think, an act of what's really in your spirit, what's really in your heart, that you can't get beyond your own inner demons and work together at a time like this. And guys talk to me about that all the time. That was an act that was very distasteful, and it was hurtful.
Paul?
I'd like to read a quote, and this is from Julian Bond, the chairman of the NAACP, and he was addressing the AFL-CIO convention on July 25th of this year. And that quote says, "Given our common interest, minority Americans and organized labor are both better off when we cooperate. Most of us are working people. Our interest and your interest are the same."
But Paul, Wayne just gave you a specific example of I don't think anybody out in the listening audience wants to hear any kind of, you know, we shall overcome type of energy or language. Wayne just gave you a specific example of an opportunity for Local 73 to prove to show an example, to engage in behavior that demonstrates that they are capable of not making decisions, racist decisions, negative decisions based upon somebody's race. You have two firefighters from the same engine house that were killed in the same fire, and Local 73 treated one firefighter because of the color of his skin differently and better than another firefighter who died in the same fire. I don't want to hear anything from Julian Bond about this. I want to hear something from you about what is your organization about and what is your organization going to do.
I think the context in what Wayne said was that his organization chose to give whatever they gave to both firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they did it. Mm-hmm. And I applaud them. Commend them for that. Okay? Local 73 did not do the same thing.
But they did worse than that. They did worse. They only gave one to one. You did worse. gave one to one.
And again, this is the first time that I'm even hearing of this. Okay, this is 3 years. I mean, this past May was 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time that this has even been brought to my attention. So I am not going to be able to answer for what happened 3 years ago when this, sitting here today, is the first time that I have heard that accusation made.
But
I have not heard that on the fire department. No one has talked to me about that. And I've been the president since January. If this was a concern of firefighters, I would have heard.
Okay, now that you
within
know
the
it,
engine houses.
Now that you know about it, now what? You know about it. It happened. Now what?
I don't know that it happened.
Oh, so
I don't know. I don't know that it happened.
So what are you saying then?
What I'm saying is it 100% accurate? Is part of his facts accurate? Is it a half-truth? I don't know.
So
I'm going to have to make an investigation to find out exactly what happened.
We can start the investigation right now, Paul. You can pick up the phone.
We're going to take a break right now. We're going to take a break right now, and I will be back with Paul Davis, president of the St. Louis Firefighters Local 73, and Captain Wayne Lester, vice chairman of FIRE.
Presents the complete 10 CD Classic Soul Ballads Collection. 144 sensual ballads. Luther Vandross, Al Green, Barry White, Aretha Franklin.
Just to be close to you.
And now, for the first time ever, you can check out the entire 10 CD collection for 30 days for just $9.95. But wait, when you order with your credit card, you'll get free shipping and handling. That's a savings of nearly $13. So order with your credit card, and for just $9.95, you can enjoy all 10 CDs of classic soul ballads in your home. And we'll ship it to you free. If it's not the best collection you've ever heard, send it back and owe nothing more.
Call 1-800-313-6969. That's 1-800-313-6969. 1-800-313-6969.
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is there attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong.
The moon that excites me, the thrills and delights me. Oh, no. Yes, just as known as you. It is.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I am talking to Paul Davis, president of St. Louis Local 73, and Captain Wayne Lester, vice chairman of FIRE. Y'all, we haven't had an opportunity to get and to take calls. What we're going to do is in the next hour, I apologize because there's so much more than I want to get to with both gentlemen in the studio with me. So we're going to take calls in the next hour, nothing but calls and questions in the next hour. But I want to continue on this issue of how race, how this Local 73 makes their decision and how it impacts upon people on the issue of race. We talked about how the two firefighters passed in the fire three years ago now, and how the Black Firefighters Association dealt with that loss and how Local 73 dealt with the loss. And, Wayne, you talked about how you were there when the plaque was handed out.
Right.
You were there. You saw it. And who was the person that was handing the plaque out?
Kenny Sturma.
And, Paul, he's on the board now, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
And I kind of want to underscore what it must have felt like for the widow to have. What did you see when you saw the plaque being handed out?
What I saw was the chairman of FIRE, Addington Stewart, present to both wives the plaques and citations from the International, and also make Derek's kids because his dad was an honorary member, give scholarships to their kids. Soon after that, 73, and the personal representative of 73, Kenny Sturma came, turned
his
back.
This is a big formal event, right?
Yes, this is at the Engine House, in Engine House Bay.
And how many people
open
were there?
Open to the public, I'd say easy, 150.
Okay, 150.
Easy.
150
yes.
people there,
yes.
Okay.
Everybody
knew that this was going to happen. Everybody was notified.
It was a pre-planned event.
Okay.
It wasn't something that just popped up. It wasn't something that happened haphazardly.
Mm-hmm.
When it came time for 73 to present their plaques, Kenny Joe Sturma presented the plaque. I saw him not even address Derek's wife. Actually just presented the plaque to Rob's wife and didn't hug, didn't kiss, didn't console, just walked away after that.
Did he hug and kiss and console Rob's wife?
Of course, when he presented the plaque, he gave her a hug and walked away.
Now, Paul, you weren't the president then, and you said that this is the first that you've heard about this. My question to you is that you weren't there, but there were other people there. Some would make the argument that, well, Derek wasn't a part of the Local 73. We didn't give him a plaque. But somebody should have, don't you think? Somebody should have at the organization on 73's end said, you know, oh, shoot, we should have done something for Derek's wife. 1 year passed, nothing's done. 2 years passed, nothing's done. 3 years has passed, still nothing has been done for Derek's wife. What do you say about that?
Let me, the week leading up to the funeral, we had two firefighters that were killed. We've discussed that.
Mm-hmm.
And our International came in and assisted in the memorial service that existed. And in our International, when you have multiple line-of-duty deaths, you get a large number of firefighters from throughout this country that come in to attend the memorial service. And we had a unique situation here, and that we had a union member and a non-union member. And our international asked us, are we treating this as a multiple line of duty death, or are we treating this as a single line of duty death? And we treated this from the beginning as a multiple line of duty death. And our international president came in, and he gave a eulogy at that memorial service at the Savas Center on Saturday after the tragic event. The issues that Wayne has expressed, like I said, this is the first time that I've heard about it sitting here today. So I don't know how to respond. Other than, and we can sit back, and we can go back into history, and you can call me a name, and I can call you a name, and we can go back and forth, and you can say, but you did that, and I did that, and you did this, and I did that, and we can go on, and we can continue this for the next 2 days. Or we can start today and start solving the problems that exist. Learn from the history that existed. Learn from the history that happened, and start working to solve the problems.
But here's the
problem. It's a difference. It's a difference between discussing problems and coming to solutions.
Here's the problem, Paul. I mean, all of that theory is accurate. All of that theory is just that theory. If you want people to begin a relationship with you, it would be foolish to expect that a person would get into a relationship with somebody and ignore everything that person has done prior to that moment. It would be a foolish and an illogical thing to say, you know what, I'm going to hire this guy and I'm going to ignore the fact that he has 16 years worth of burglary charges and he's done 15 years worth for stealing and embezzlement. So wait a minute. So it is absurd to say that we are supposed to step away from what people have actually done. History, we're not talking about history. We're talking about what has happened recently by an organization in conjunction with a thousand other things that this organization has done. If you want people to really believe that you are not like the action that happened when the wife of a firefighter had her back turned to her because she was not white and the other woman was, then I guess the expectation would be that you as the president, instead of saying let's get beyond history, should have said on this show when you heard about it for the first time, this is outrageous. If that happened, then I, as the president of this organization, am going to make this right because this is not something that is supposed to happen. You didn't say that. You didn't call to even find out that it did happen when we took the break. Instead, you're giving us a lecture on what we're supposed to do about history. You have an opportunity to make history right now, and you didn't.
Like I said, I did not say ignore the history that existed. What I said or meant to say was let's learn from the history that has existed. And like I said in the last hour, when you look at throughout this country and the deplorable conditions that African Americans were forced to work under in the 40s, 50s, and 60s,
What are you going to do about this issue right now?
What am I going to do about this issue right now? Like I said earlier, this is a bottom-up organization. This is a democratic organization. I do not have the authoritarian ability to make a decision for this local. But what I will bring up is I will make sure that it is on our agenda at our next executive board meeting to be brought up at our next general membership meeting.
Wayne.
Let me say this so that you don't, to the listening audience, you don't become president overnight. I didn't become a vice chairman overnight. I worked in this organization. Anybody know the history of our organization? You come in, you get on committees, you work, you get to know the personalities. You go to the meetings, you fuss, you fight, you get your points across, you learn people as the years go by. I have gone on 16 years on the St. Louis Fire Department. I've been a member of fire for 16 years. I'm not a Johnny come lately. I have a history in this organization. I have a history on the fire department. Paul has a history in the fire department. He has a history in his organization. It's not enough to say that I'm just the president or I just became the president. What did you do before then? Were you one of those voices that you say that you answered to now that you're the president? Were you letting your opinion known then when you were, before you became the president? Or did you go through the ranks? And did you go through the steps? I offered him my cell phone to call a person, and he refused to accept it. And that's okay. I think, though, if he wants to get to solutions, I think he should join with us and say, let the Board of Aldermen take an official look at what's going on in the St. Louis Fire Department and see if this is an administrative interference from the top of this city, from the city officials, from the mayor to his deputy mayor and to the director of public safety. Let's see if he's willing to get to solutions and join with us and say, Board of Aldermen, why don't you have an official form and investigate what's going on?
When we come back, we'll be taking your phone calls. I'm talking to Paul Davis, president of the St. Louis Firefighters Local 73, Captain Wayne Luster, vice chairman of fire. I'm Liz Brown. And if you want to get a look at the T-shirts that we were talking about, the horrific racist caricature of a T-shirt that the firefighters, white firefighters wore in protest of Sherman, George, you can check that out at my website at lizbrown.com. If you want to get a look at the letter that the Local 73 sent out, make your own opinion about what it says and what it means. Check that out at lizbrown.com. If you want to comment on that, get on over to Blogitude, STL, at lizbrown.com. Make your comments. We'll share them on the air. This is Liz Brown. We'll be back. We're canceling our next guest because we ain't done here. Stay with us.
And there's more to follow following the news at 9 o'clock here on AM 920.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
And as we said, the news is next from the ABC Radio Network and the WGNU Newsroom at 9 o'clock.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Karen Chase. A chilling warning in a secret law enforcement report to Homeland Security officials. ABC's Jim Hickey has the details.
Classified law enforcement documents may refer to spectacular terrorist attacks planned for the U.S. this summer. But Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff seems far less alarmed.
I think it would be misleading to suggest that there was any kind of specific information about an attack.
Chertoff tells ABC News that traditionally Al-Qaeda uses high-profile methods to carry out attacks, and he says it is not surprising to have analysts from time to time remind us of that. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
In the UK, investigators have rounded up two more suspects in connection with the three failed weekend terror attacks, and the famous British stiff upper lip is quivering just a bit.
Please, that doesn't work. Yeah, we all say get on with it, but we're all fearful, we're all cautious, we all suspect everybody.
President Bush called the attempted attacks a reminder you never know where terrorists will strike. The president is meeting with Russian President Putin at his family's vacation home in Maine, but ABC's Martha Raddatz says expectations are low.
Today, they really get down to business discussing missile defense. The U.S. wants to place a missile defense system in Europe, one section in the Czech Republic, another in Poland. President Putin does not want that. He wants it placed in Azerbaijan, so there is some disagreement about that. And there are no breakthroughs expected, not on that or on stiffer sanctions for Iran.
The space shuttle Atlantis continues its cross-country piggyback ride on the 747. It started in California, the landing site from its last mission, and took off from Nebraska today. Its ultimate destination is Florida. Like Grant took Richmond, Gadget Geek snapped up almost all the iPhones within hours of its grand debut. But the sale wasn't completely without hang-ups. Some customers had trouble activating them. A spokesman says so many phones activating at once stretched the server. This is ABC News.
Another how-to half-minute from the Home Depot.
Have you checked the forecast for this weekend?
Yeah, the dining room's turning from mostly drab to sunny yellow.
Oh.
And the bathroom will be a mix of warm blue and white accents.
Nothing changes the outlook for your weekend and the whole look of your home like $6 off 1 gallon cans and $25 off 5 gallon buckets of Behr paint by mail-in rebate. Now at the Home Depot.
Well, I guess that means we're painting, huh?
Here's your brush.
You can do it. We can help. Valid through July 7th in U.S. only. Void where prohibited. See store for details.
No matter where you go this summer, Goodyear gives you the freedom to get there. And now, during the Goodyear Freedom to Get There tire sale, get up to a $50 mail-in cash card with the purchase of a set of four select Goodyear tires. Or double your cash card up to $100 when you make the purchase on your Goodyear credit card. Hurry, the Goodyear Freedom to Get There tire sale ends July 21st. For complete details and location nearest you, visit GoodyearTires.com. Certain restrictions and conditions apply. Goodyear credit card purchases subject to credit approval.
Something spicy was cooking this weekend at the box office.
Ratatouille?
The animated kids flick about a rat in a restaurant is the big cheese at the box office.
I want to make things, Dad.
Stay away from the humans. It's dangerous. Now shut up and eat your garbage.
Ratatouille debuts at number one with over $47 million, the lowest opening for a Pixar release in 9 years.
That's going to wake the neighbors.
The fourth installment in the Die Hard series opens in second place. The weekend's other new movie...
The intent is to maximize profits.
Sicko, the new Michael Moore documentary, debuts at number 9. Dave Alpert, ABC News, Hollywood.
A cheesy version of Mount Rushmore is turning heads in Wisconsin. A sculptor turned a 700-pound block of cheddar into a replica of the famous hillside with the faces of Washington, Jefferson, Roosevelt, and Lincoln. The carving was commissioned by Cheez-It Crackers and goes on a publicity tour in New York before eventually being cut into cubes in Oklahoma to become a snack for the homeless. I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
It's time for this hour's WGNU local report. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news today, a memorial service was held Saturday afternoon at Salem in Ladue United Methodist Church for former federal judge and Missouri Congressman William Hungate. Hungate, who represented Missouri's 9th District from 1964 to 1977, died June 22nd at age 84. While in Congress, the longtime Democrat introduced an article of impeachment against President Richard Nixon. Hungate also chaired a subcommittee that investigated Nixon's pardon by his successor, President Gerald Ford. As a federal judge, Hungate played a key role in the court case that led to the desegregation of St. Louis's public schools. The Missouri Foundation for Health is accepting applications to be considered for nomination to the Board of Directors. 5 board positions are available. The directors govern MFH's efforts to provide funding to nonprofit organizations that help improve the health of the state's uninsured, underinsured, and underserved. The 15-member board manages $1.3 billion in assets and distributes $60 million in grants annually. Board members serve without pay for 3-year terms. MFH is seeking applicants with legal or investment experience. Applications must be postmarked by August 17th. And finally, the National PTA's National Annual Convention and Exhibition wrapped up Sunday at the St. Louis Renaissance Grand Hotel. Approximately 2,500 attended that conference. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's this hour's WGNU Local Report.
And at 5 minutes after 9 o'clock, Charles Gear with a look at the WGNU traffic. Not much traffic to look at the moment. There is a disabled vehicle blocking the shoulder on southbound 270 between 40 and Manchester, but that seems to be about it. The usual construction tie-ups and slowdowns are in place, and they are going to be settling down a bit for the 4th of July holiday, but... The rules still apply as far as driving through construction zones, whether there are workers there or not. Taking a look at the WGNU forecast through the 4th of July, today sunny with a high in the mid-80s, tonight clear, the low in the mid-60s. Tuesday mostly sunny with a high near 90, partly cloudy Tuesday night with a low in the lower 70s. For Wednesday the 4th, pretty much the same thing day and night, cloudy, a chance of thunderstorms, the high Wednesday in the lower 90s, the low Wednesday night in... the lower 70s. Right now, 72 degrees at AM 920 WGNU. 72 degrees, also the official reading at Lambert Field, coming up on 6 minutes past 9 o'clock. And as you have already gathered, this is a special morning in the sense that Liz Brown is, well, Liz, you can do this better than I can. What's coming up next?
Until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is their attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air from the brother.
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Hundred is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll free long distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU, 1-877-920-WGNU. And don't forget, please get to the website at lizbrown.com. That's LIZZBrown.com. Or you can email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. That's revolution@lizbrown.com. You need to get in on this show. You need to get in on this discussion. You need to get in on these issues. We are now taking calls from our callers as we talk about the issue of race and race in our fire departments. What is happening in the city of St. Louis? What is happening all across the country? Check out the website. I encourage you to do so because we have a photograph of a T-shirt with a caricature, a racist caricature of the current fire chief, the only black fire chief on it. And during the break, I received a note that appears to be a letter from Michael Stroud, a retired firefighter, member of Local 77, to the firefighters saying, "Dear firefighters, in response to the T-shirt,
The T-shirts has been overwhelming. Hopefully there will be some new color selections to choose from coming soon. There has even been some interest from firefighters in other departments. What that says about where we are as a society, what that says about where we are as a fire department, what that says about where we are in terms of race. Check if you want to see what the T-shirt looks like. Go to my website, lizbrown.com. It's there on the front page of it. We're going to take some of those calls.
Can I say something before we...
Sure.
With regards to that, the things that we've been discussing today, the issues...
And this is Paul Davis, president of Local Firefighter 73. Go right ahead.
You know, the historical perspective, like I was stating earlier, the things that have occurred, everything mentioned so far occurred prior to my... 10 years as president, and I'm trying to pass the olive branch and try to do something a little different. But something kind of offended me, and that is last night when I saw on your blogitude, with the picture of the T-shirt, was the caption underneath it. Went to a Klan rally, and all I got was this T-shirt.
Well, the title of the blog was "We went to a Klan rally and all we got was this lousy T-shirt."
Right. And so, like we've been discussing, and we've been discussing the historical perspective and the things that have occurred. That's something that happened yesterday.
What did?
The notation under the picture about going to a Klan rally, because I'm going to challenge you that I don't think you probably got that at a Klan rally, and I think for my members. And for the white firefighters on the St. Louis Fire Department, I don't think any of them belong to the Ku Klux Klan. And I think it's offensive to even suggest that.
Well, here's the thing. And the reason why I did, I thought it was clever. And I thought it was kind of funny. And the reason I made the connection of it is because the picture, as we've discussed earlier, and as if you've even said earlier that it was offensive, that it is not something that you would wear. It is not something that you think your members should wear. It is a racist caricature. So to make the connection of a racist caricature to the Klan is a natural linkage. And I don't think that there's any other linkage that you could make to a racist act than the Klan. And the thing did not to suggest, well, and I don't know. I don't know. It just says, you said you didn't know about what happened with handing out of the plaques. You weren't there. I don't know if a member of the Klan put together that T-shirt. I don't know if a member of the Klan is wearing that T-shirt, and neither do you. And it seems to me the easiest way to deal with this is to say, you know what? We don't want anything associated with any of our firefighters that suggests at all any kind of racism, any kind of racist act, or any possibility of the linkage to a racist organization. It seems to me that a person that would put out a T-shirt like that, and now we're seeing that y'all are going to be trying to make, that some folks are going to try to be making money off of these T-shirts, is that's dead up Klan stuff. That's dead up Klan stuff. So that's why I made the analogy, and that's why I made the linkage. And I don't see why anybody would take offense to that, because I'm not saying that the good firefighters are wearing the T-shirt. I'm saying that the bad firefighters are wearing this racist T-shirt.
But the connotation was there was that you had went to a Klan rally, or that someone went to a Klan rally.
And got a racist T-shirt. I just think that the connotation or even the suggestion. It's a racist T-shirt. Where else do you get racist T-shirts but at a Klan rally?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I just wanted to make the point.
Okay.
That, I mean, and my point is, like I said earlier, we can continue to talk about things that have happened and things that are happening, or we can start working on solutions to the problems. Anybody can sit around a room and talk about problems. But it takes
something. We haven't even gotten to that place yet.
So let's get to a point where we can start talking to solutions.
But, Paul, we haven't even gotten to the place where we're sitting around the table talking about problems. If you didn't know, as the president of this organization, about what happened to one of the most horrific things that's happened to this fire department, the death of those two firefighters, if you didn't know that your organization dissed her in this way, then we need to talk. Folks need to be talking about stuff. We can't be running from the past saying that we don't need to talk about it anymore. We don't need to keep talking about it. We haven't talked about it. You didn't know it. And that's because your people haven't been talking to you. And your people haven't been talking, or your people didn't see anything wrong with it. That's because the words were not used and the talking did not take place. Talking needs to take place.
That's why I'm here.
All right. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. Adam, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Adam Long, and I'm a battalion chief of the St. Louis Fire Department, and I happen to be African-American. I was also the incident commander at the tragic fire in May of 2002 where both Derek and Rob gave their lives. I was also at the ceremony at Engine House 1 that Wayne spoke of. And, hello?
Yes,
Hello?
That's on your end.
Okay. And, yes, it did happen. I was there. It's common knowledge now that on that night, conditions in the building got to be very bad. And by me being the incident commander, it was my responsibility to make sure that our men were safe. And I asked that the building be evacuated. Once the building was evacuated, we did a member accountability roll call, and it was then that I found out that Derek was missing. And, not Derek, but Rob was missing, and Derek was out of the building. Derek went back in the building to get Rob. So, like I said, it's common knowledge that this has happened, and if 73 wanted to do something to rectify the wrong that was done at that particular ceremony, then they should have acknowledged what Derek did. There was an organization that gave Angie a check for $25,000, I think, about a year after Derek and Rob's death, acknowledging his act of heroism. Local 73 has yet to acknowledge what Derek did. Derek and Rob had a closeness that nobody seems to talk about. They had a lot in common, but Derek and Rob were close. And nobody talks about that. You know, nobody talks about the fact that, you know, they played basketball together. You know, they would sit at the dinner table with me and Captain Gary Ruffin, who was the captain on the rescue squad. And Derek and Rob were always the ones that played cards against us. When they died, there was a ceremony in which Derek and Rob were promoted posthumously to the rank of captain. At one of the ceremonies after their death, the mayor promised Angie and Laura that they would be compensated as if their husbands were actually captains. There was a bill introduced to the Board of Aldermen, you know, to get that compensation for those families. And it was because of a couple of riders or something that Local 73 attached to those bills that it got stalled in the Board of Aldermen. And to this day, Angie and Laura and their families have yet to be compensated because of that. And I'd like for Paul to speak to that, if he may.
Thank you so much, Adam.
You're quite welcome.
Not wanting to speak for the mayor, I'll let him speak for himself. But I can tell you that the circumstances surrounding... Well, first of all, let me go to the first part of the conversation when you talked about Derek going in and gave his life going in after Rob. That is 100% accurate. And I stated earlier that we have over 800 firefighters on this job, and I think that 800 firefighters would do the same thing. We go in, we protect each other. We're putting our lives on the line for each other. Fighting a fire is... The most equivalent thing is on-duty combat in the military. I mean, we rely on each other. And this was a situation that occurred, race notwithstanding. that one brother gave his life for another. Now, with regards to the pension benefit or the issue regarding the mayor's statement, I think it was...
And the award from Local 73 for the specific heroism of Derek.
Right. The Chief Long spoke about that the mayor had promised both widows that the two captains would receive the benefits of a captain. It was a situation. It was an emotional time. It was an emotional event. The mayor was probably thinking at the time that this would be something that would be easy for the city to do. Changing our pension benefits is a five-step process. We have to get it passed in the House and the Senate, and the governor has to sign it. In addition, we have to bring it back. The Board of Aldermen has to pass it, and the mayor has to sign it. When you pass bills like that, you have to have an actuarial study to determine what the cost is. And when it came back from Jeff City and introduced into the Board of Aldermen and the actuaries got involved to determine what the cost of the benefit would be, it was deemed to, you know, on the city's end, the city did not pass the bill because it was too costly for the city to pass such a that resolution or that pension benefit. The city and the financial struggles that they're in, our pension system, the police department pension system recently sued the city of St. Louis because of lack of contributions, and we have approximately $30 million settlement against the city of St. Louis for our pension systems for monies that are owed us for the benefits that we have. And this benefit would have added to that cost, and so the city chose not to, try to get that benefit passed, putting the city in more financial hardship.
Let's talk about something that doesn't cost any money. Let's talk about the issue of Local 73 and the issuance of the award that Adam talked about, that Derek didn't get as being the person that went in and got robbed.
Local 73 is that I'm aware of. We've never given anybody an award for anything, you know, with regards to that. Any of the award ceremonies, the things that exist, every October we have an awards mass, and all that is done through the fire department.
Let's get to some of our other calls. Greg, you have a question or comment?
I have a few comments, and I got a question for Wayne, if you'd let me go through them, then I'll hang up. My first comment is, on the flag issue, I haven't heard anything about it either.
Are you a firefighter, Greg?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay.
And if Adam said it happened, then it happened. But I'd like to...
Not if Wayne said.
I'd like to comment on the plaque issue. And here's my comment. This is a hard, like Paul said, this is a hard question to answer because both these, their firefighters are now dead. But what I'd like to say was, when they were alive, Derek had every opportunity to join Local 73. Mm. I had numerous conversations with him about that, and I had numerous conversations with him about your show, because I've called before. Mm. Now, if he don't want to join, then that's fine. That's his, that's his prerogative. But Rob had no opportunity to join fire because of his skin color. Now, the second comment I want to make...
Wait a minute. Let's get back to the first.
I'll make my comment, and then I'll hang up, and I'll let
I need some clarity on your comment. That's why I need to get back to your comment. So if I'm understanding you right, you accurately, Greg, you're saying that it's Derek's fault that he didn't get a plaque from 73 because he didn't join 73?
No, that is not what I'm saying. If Local 73 probably should have given one.
You think?
Because gave them one, and that's fine, and they should have done that, and they didn't, and I'm sorry about that. But
well, you didn't say that. This is the first time you said that, so I appreciate you saying that now.
I'm sorry about that. They should have. Derek was a friend of mine. Now, but on the other hand, when they were alive, the situation was different. Because of his skin color, he couldn't even join the fire. So that's my comment, and I'll let them guys discuss it. Okay. My second comment is, I had a meeting with Marty Abruzzi some years ago, right after the selection of fire chief had taken place, and Marty Abruzzi asked me, as a regular firefighter in his office, he said, hey, what do you think about the selection of, you know, Sherman George's chief? And my comment was, well, I think we should go down the list, that person for the job. That's our my personal stance and Local 73 stance. We should go right down the list, that person for the job. He told me that the number one candidate didn't want a transfer policy. The number two candidate didn't have, he hadn't been on the track for some 10, 15 years, so he didn't have the experience of fire ground. And the number three candidate wanted a transfer policy. So I believe, since what Marty Boosie told me, that the main reason why Sherman George was picked because of this transfer policy. And once he gets picked, if he wants to go against the transfer policy, it seems odd to me that anybody can say anything when they get the job, and then as soon as they get it, if they're just going to go back on what they said, then...
Greg, let me ask you two questions, quick questions before we go, because we have to take a break.
Sure.
Were you an elected official of 73 when you were sitting in the office with Marty Abusi?
No, ma'am.
So why would Marty Abusi share with you that kind of information?
He asked me a question.
I know, but he said he shared with you really, really private information. So my question, I'm just wondering if a black person could have walked into Marty Abusi's office and gotten that kind of intimate information about what was going on in the fire department. Why would he give that information to you? Who are you? For him to give you that kind of private information about who was on one and, what the first one had, what the second one had, and what the third one had.
I'm not a mind reader, Ms. Brown, but I do know that he told me that information.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm just curious. Thanks for your call, Greg. It's kind of interesting that white folks can walk into Marty Lucy's office and get all this information.
I think that's very interesting.
Isn't that very interesting? He's not even an elected official. Marty Lucy is telling him all his business.
I think it makes the point of what we've been talking about. And if he, I know what he was trying to get to as far as Rob being a member.
He needed
to be listening in 6 hours.
Hold that thought. We'll be back to discuss that. But dang, all he had to do was walk in the office and Marty just said, tell me what you need to know, and he gives it to him. Ain't that something? My name is Liz Brown. I'll be back. Stay with me. Have you heard about Golden Grocer Natural Market? It's locally owned and operated for over 30 years and serving and meeting your health needs by ensuring the best quality and selection in vitamin supplements and organic groceries. Golden Grocer Natural Market has the largest loose herb selection around. You can also get your grains and natural beauty items as well. Their staff is friendly, knowledgeable, and committed to helping you on your journey to improved and enhanced health. Golden Grocer believes that the healthiest goal is achieving balance in every area of your life. So, live your life like it's golden, and let Golden Grocer help you along the way. Golden Grocer, Natural Market, 335 North Euclid, right there in the Central West End. Open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 12 to 5. Golden Grocer, 367-0405. That's 367-0405.
Are you an inventor, or do you know an inventor who would like to attempt to have an invention or idea patented and submitted to industry? Well, for free information on how to proceed, call this toll-free number.
Call 800-346-9966.
InventHelp, one of America's largest invention companies, has inventor information you can have for free. Record your invention's date of origination, plus get an information brochure and other materials of interest to new inventors. Learn how to get this free information just by calling this toll-free number.
Call 800-346-9966. That's 1-800-346-9966.
Even if you have an idea for improving an existing product and don't know where to go with it, you'll want this free inventor's information. It shows how InventHelp may assist you in trying to patent your invention and submit it to industry. So call InventHelp right now, toll free.
Call 800-346-9966. That's 1-800-346-9966.
More to come on this special edition of the Best of the Award-Winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown here on AM 920 WGNU.
ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am here with Captain Wayne Lester, Vice Chairman of Fire, Paul Davis, President of St. Louis Firefighters, Local 73, and we're talking about the issues of race in the St. Louis City Fire Department. Wayne, one of the callers that called, Greg, called, and he made the comment that, well, white people can't join fire, and black people can join Local 73. Is that an argument that is significant or meaningful to you?
It's not significant or meaningful, but to address it, I think if he was listening to the 6 o'clock hour, we gave the history of why we are separated.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't acts on our part. It was acts on the local part. And now we're at a place where, and if you look at it, it's a common sense approach. Why would you join an organization that is hell-bent on destroying you? And everywhere we go around this city, we have politicians, we have leaders of organization asking fire to become a part of the local. Now it's a matter of money.
Mm-hmm.
They're missing $250,000 annually that they are not getting from our members. It's an economic reason, and Mr. Hughes told you that. We're getting the same benefits, and we will. We're willing to pay a fair share according to the collective bargaining rules.
That's something
that I question. I don't even know if they have an agreement with the city. The last I spoke, when I spoke with Mr. Franks about the agreement, the meet and confer,
mm-hmm.
he told me that they had an agreement on the table since December, and this local hadn't signed it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know what they were going to do,
so we don't
if they were
going
to sign it or not.
And Paul, what do you say to that?
Well,
it's not. It hasn't been signed, and it hasn't been signed since December.
Since December.
Since
right.
December.
The issue that Wayne talked about. I mean, he said that we're hell bent on destroying them. That is not the case. Local 73 is a Democratic run organization, and I started to make the comparison with Congress and the Senate. As a Democratic organization, you work from within. You make the changes from inside the organization. And if you're not inside the organization, if somebody else wants to try to tell this union what we should try to do, you know, and they're outside a firefighter, they're not a firefighter,
they're another organization or another person, we're not going to listen to them.
But we're talking,
within
about white and black and firefighters. We're not talking about people outside of what it is that you do. We're talking about firefighters. We're talking
exactly.
about black firefighters that say that you're an organization that supports, condones, or doesn't say anything negative about T-shirts with racist caricatures on them. You're an organization that is against affirmative action. You're an organization that takes their members' dues to fight affirmative action. You're an organization that never filed a lawsuit to make certain that the black people that live in the city are represented in the fire department. You're an organization that is opposed to, has protested against a fire chief in a personal way that no fire chief has ever been protested against before in the city of St. Louis. So this is black, white firefighters. Why should black firefighters join an organization that has done things 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and is doing things this year that are contrary to the issues of black people?
If a white fire chief
mm-hmm.
would have made the same decisions, we had the same arguments that the current fire chief had, we would have picketed, we would have...
Never picketed the last fire chief that didn't have
the issue involved...
Transfer policy that this one has. You never picketed his house.
We never picketed...
You never picketed him.
We never picketed Chief George's house.
I didn't mean to say that. You didn't picket.
Okay.
You have picketed.
When the pickets came up, when we put pickets up last summer, it was over the issue of promotions.
Mm-hmm.
Had the former fire chief not made the promotions that should be made? I mean, when the Department of Personnel in April of 2004 certified a list for promotions, we were 8 captains short, 2 battalion chiefs short. We have an agreed-to pay ordinance that calls for 115 captains, 19 battalion chiefs. If we're under 115 captains, we only have 107, we're 8 captains short. Right now, we're 15 captains short because the fire chief refuses to make promotions. That's what we were protesting. That's why we were out in front of headquarters. That's why we were out in front of City Hall. I don't care if the fire chief is white,
and the
black, red, brown, or green.
But see, but
if he'd not make him put the promotion,
Paul, people make that argument all the time. I don't care if people are red, black, and there aren't any green people. So we need to talk about that. We're talking about black people and white people, and the letters that your organization has sent out has dealt with the color of people like me. It said Northside is going to be doing this. We're not doing anything that Northside is doing. We're going to be voting for Francis Lay, but Northside is going to be voting for this. You don't want to vote like Northside is voting. Northside means black people. That's about black people. It's not about green people. It's not about white people. It's about black people and about what black people want and about what white people don't want. And the city of St. Louis, the race of Francis Lay and Irene J. Smith was a race about race. It was a race about what black people want and what white people want. And your organization on its letterhead said to your white members, don't let Northside black people win this. We have got to win this. That's about race.
It's about politics.
And
it's
race.
About race,
and
but
race.
It's about politics.
But let's talk about the politics part of it. The politics of it is easy. We're not talking about the politics of it. We're talking about the race part of it, because your organization could have just as easily said, vote for Francis Lay because we want Francis Lay, and not made it a race issue, but your organization made it a race and a politics issue, and that brings us back to the place where we began. Why should black people want to be part of an organization that makes race an issue and race to the detriment of black people? I mean, that's crazy to ask black people to pay dues to an organization that is hell-bent on engaging in behavior that is not to the interest of black people.
I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because you make the changes from within. And if our organization is making wrong decisions and our policies and our procedures are wrong, or if they're against African Americans, I have African Americans. First of all, I have African Americans in my local, and I'm going to quote one of my members.
One of your ten members organization.
And this member stated, he said, look, I believe, personally, my thought is, I believe fire made a mistake when they formed their own association and dropped out of Local 73. And his premise is that through the 40s, 50s, and 60s, during the civil rights struggles, African Americans in this country were struggling to be included. They were struggling to get into the Congress. They were struggling to get... And we took a desegregated organization and made it segregated.
Paul, you don't see that you... Wait a minute, Paul. You have a black man that is saying to you that I should trust an organization and be part of an organization that did nothing to make more of me, more black firefighters. You're gonna listen to the words of one man out of, if this is a democratic society and we're based on numbers and all of that, there are 390 black firefighters and paramedics that say, we are really glad that fire is here. And all of the thousands of family members that are attached to those 390-something people, you quote me one pitiful little man that is in an organization, and he's saying that it was better off before fire. That's crazy.
Here's a black man. Can I speak as a black man that's benefited from the efforts of fire? First of all, you got to understand, because there are black firefighters, they impact the community on annually, $25 million strong. That means we buy houses, buy cars, the whole nine. And it's because we have a job. And it was because of fire going to court, teaming up with the NAACP to help fund the battles to get us 50-50 hired. 73, the city, fire, entered into a consent decree that would allow 50% hiring rate, black and white. Now, when it came time for that to end, we suggested that we continue because it's good for the city. And if you look at the city is 51, 52, 53, some would argue even higher, black, and as far as the population. So why wouldn't 73 agree to continue the consent decree? Why wouldn't the city continue the consent decree? The issue becomes then, do I join an organization? And this is the philosophy, not of just Wayne Luster, but it's the philosophy of the members of FIRE. Why would I join an organization and pay into an organization that's going to kick me in my behind or eventually kick me out the door? It doesn't make sense. A sane person wouldn't do that. What's the bigger issue, which I think Greg hit upon, and I know Greg probably won't believe me, is Greg is a private. And he's in the director's office. Let's let that sink in for a minute. You have privates going to the mayor. You have privates going to the director. You have privates calling the deputy mayor and requesting things over the appointed authority.
Mm.
They are disregarding the expert in the St. Louis Fire Department that has over 30 years of experience. Why do we have a black caucus? Why do we have a black board of aldermen caucus? Why do we have these national organizations for the interests of black folks?
Mm-hmm. But they are also part of the umbrella organization. The Congressional Black Caucus did not get out of Congress. The NAACP has not limited their membership to African American members. NAACP opens their membership to everybody. Coalitions need to be built. And we need to start getting to the root of the problem and start coming to solutions to the problem. And our international and my local, and I brought for you, Liz, to share on our international website, www.iaff.org, under our human relations issue, okay, our international president realizes that there is a problem nationwide. And last November in Memphis, Tennessee, he called together all of the African-American presidents of our international locals. In April of this year, Johnny Brewington, the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters president, had a meeting in Washington, D.C. with Harold Schaeberger.
I need you to hold that thought. Hold that thought, because we're 3 minutes over our break. We've got to take a break here. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Captain Wayne Luster, Vice Chair of FIRE, and also Paul Davis, President of St. Louis Firefighters Local 73. We'll get to some of your calls. We'll get to some more of our discussion. I told you I'd get to the calls. We'll get to your calls. Stay with us.
Bob Anderson.
I'm stepping out with my baby.
People Magazine says Bob Anderson is the best singing impressionist in the world.
The days of wine and rum.
Have dinner and see the show with the one and only Bob Anderson. For show tickets, call 417-332-1960. Bob Anderson at Club 57 at Dick Clark's American Bandstand Theater.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. I'd like to introduce to you one of my customers, Joe Scoggins. Mr. Scoggins, how long ago did we work on your property?
It was approximately 8 to 9 years ago, Mr. Persons.
Okay, have you had any problems with your roof since that time?
Well, actually, about 3 weeks ago, I called you, and there was some water damage that was caused as a result of the storm last fall.
Okay.
And you were out the following day to do the repair work. And it was done in such a professional way that I would recommend you to any and everyone.
So how much did we charge you?
It was free, and it was done within a matter of 3 hours.
All right.
So I called you one day, and you were out the very next day, you and your son and his assistant, and you went up on the roof, and you accomplished the task within a matter of 3 hours.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. Our service starts when we complete your roof. Our number is 361-7127. You can call us day or night. 361-7127.
Kirby Van Hirsch. You won't believe your eyes at this thrill-a-minute production. Packed full of astonishing disappearing acts, huge illusions, and exotic animals. See a royal white tiger, a unicorn, a helicopter appearing in 4 seconds flat, assistants cut in half, one-of-a-kind surprises, and more. Plus, take a magical mystery tour backstage with Kirby and his big cats. Kirby Van Birch. Millions have been amazed. Now it's your turn. Kirby Van Birch Theater, Highway 248, Branson, Missouri, 417-337-7140.
Hi, I'm Laurie Fulkerson. Join me right after the 10 o'clock news here on AM 920, WGNU.
Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Now, I'm on vacation until Friday, but I will still be here with you through the magic of the best of the wake-up call. Today, I wanted to remind you how history repeats itself. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., we will revisit the state of the St. Louis Fire Department. You see, last Friday, Local 73, that's the White Firefighters Union, placed an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an ad attacking our city's first black fire chief. Is their attack based on race? Well, just listen to the two-hour interview I conducted 2 years ago with the head of the White Firefighters Local 73 and FIRE, Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality. And you be the judge. This interview is the only one of its kind in the history of the city. You don't want to miss it. White firefighters buying ads to attack our first black fire chief? Whew, it's going to be a long, hot summer. Take a listen, and I will be back on Friday. Stay strong.
To the wake-up call, I am here with Paul Davis, President of St. Louis Firefighter Local 73, Captain Wayne Luster, Vice Chairman of FIRE, and we've got to get to some of these calls. Let me get to some of these calls here. Let's try Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
Outstanding.
I'd like to talk to the captain. You know, I used to be a union organizer, and that probably have very, very few unions have affirmative action program inside their contract. And I used to advocate that black people need to separate from almost all unions, even the United Auto Workers, because it's so bad with United Auto Workers that black people file unfair labor practices on the union because they won't represent them in discrimination suits. So you would be out of your mind to merge with a white union. All of them are having problems. Have a good day.
Can I say something, Liz?
All we got to do is ask ourselves, and Paul here, he's the president, he can answer this question. How many black of those 10 members you have, how many of them hold an office or ever held an office? Not only that, you've got to look at history, because when we look at this, we talk about integration, and to the detriment almost, integration has hurt us in a respect. Where are our black banks? Where are our black grocery stores.
The local black schools.
Where the black schools at.
Mm-hmm.
When you integrate, and this is their approach, they want to absorb us and eliminate us.
And then take the money from them.
Exactly.
Paul, let me let Paul jump in
here. I was just going to say, Kevin, on the last call, talked about the United Auto Workers, and I just find it odd that he would bring up the United Auto Workers. In 1963, the Civil Rights March in Washington, D.C., if you look at the picture of Martin Luther King, you'll see Walter Reuther, who's the former international president of the United Auto Workers of America. Labor was behind that march. A. Phillips Randolph.
Marching in the march is one thing. It's doing the do after the march. And nobody, I mean, everybody wants to hold up pictures of people saying, I was with Martin Luther King at the time. This is 2005.
This is
the
2005.
Issue is that, and the same issues that Martin Luther King was marching against back in 1960-something exist today, no matter who was standing there marching next to him.
And I agree with what Julian Bond said. The Civil Rights March and labor unions, we have a lot in common. When you're cut, I bleed. And like I said, that's why I came on this show. The issues that have been brought up occurred prior to me taking over as president of this organization. Now that I am the president, we are having communications. We're having a talk show. When was the last time in the city of St. Louis that you had the two organizations sitting down and talking and discussing the problems? And we've got to, I want to do more than discussing the problems. I want to reach solutions to the
call
problem.
For the forum. I agree with you, Paul. We ought to look for solutions. And we can call for a official forum right now from the Board of Aldermen. Fine 73 to the citizens of St. Louis, to the mayor, to the director of public safety, everyone. We're saying we want a public forum from the Board of Aldermen, independent of everybody, to look at the issues that's going on in the St. Louis Fire Department. You agree, don't you, Paul?
We have a forum set up. Dr. Buford, Dr. Suggs, the Urban League. We've had two meetings. It is an official forum.
That's not
the
official.
The NAACP set it up. The mayor appointed people,
first of all, let's stop. NAACP did not set this up. It was the Black Leadership Roundtable. We had two meetings, and then when we start speaking from the heart, they stopped coming.
And the Black Leadership Roundtable wanted y'all to join the white union. That was their position. So, you have NAACP because the guy that says NAACP got a gig on the Metropolitan, the sewer board. He has a job from Francis Slay. Yeah, you have the Urban League because the Urban League supports Francis Slay. Yeah, you have the American, the St. Louis American because Donald Suggs didn't endorse Irene J. Smith and supports Francis Slay and supported Francis Slay school board and gets money as a result of the connection that he has with this particular mayor and this particular administration. If you want an honest discussion and not a compromise discussion or not an agenda by individuals that are cutting deals with the administration that is against Sherman George, that told Sherman George to pay your own lawyer, that said we will change the rules of everything to get at Sherman George. If you want a meeting, if you want to have a forum, then have people that don't have an agenda and don't have an interest, have a public forum.
How about it, Paul?
It was Don Wolf, the fire chief's attorney, that was the
that's the past. Let's deal with now. You
want
to go there now?
Let's get Congressman Clay to help
the
us.
The Board of Aldermen. Do you want the public vote?
I'm willing to sit down with anybody and everybody in this city and come to
a
solution.
And as a show of good faith, make a statement that any firefighter that is wearing a racist caricature of the sitting fire chief will be reprimanded. That this is wrong and this is not something that your organization pushes. Can we have that?
Yes, you can have that.
Okay, let me get to some of our calls. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Chris.
Yes, ma'am. My question is, do you consider the Riverfront Times a racist publication?
At times, yes.
Okay, did you object to the caricature of the Riverfront Times? because they're actually the ones who created it.
And also, there's a writer that created Little Black Sambo. There's a writer that created all of these racist caricatures, and the decision that we have as adults is whether or not we would select them or not. So this, your organization or your people went out and selected the most racist caricature and made it a T-shirt. And apparently, according to this note that I have from Mike Stroud, it's selling really well. And it's, racist stuff does sell well in the United States.
Well, ma'am, did you, if you're so opposed to the caricature T-shirt, did you go so far as to call the Riverfront Times or write the Riverfront Times and voice your concerns and objections to the caricature that was created by them?
I have not had an opportunity to voice my concern and write a letter for every single racist act that has occurred in this United States.
Well, you seem pretty offended by the T-shirt, therefore
I am. Aren't you? Aren't you offended by it?
Yes, ma'am. And I had nothing to do with it.
Okay, have you written a letter?
No,
have you voiced your
not.
Concern? Have you called the fire department to ask them to tell their members to stop wearing this racist T-shirt?
What I have done is I have too much going on in my personal life to take that issue up with myself.
But I'm supposed to.
Well, you're on the air, and you're harping on how offended you are by this.
But again, if the evidence of my offense is not whether I've called the Riverfront Times, the evidence of my offense is the fact that I am calling out the people who chose to replicate a racist caricature. And that's what this is about right now. This is calling out the people that have chosen to replicate it. And that's outrageous.
Another comment I'd like to make, though, in reference to Greg and having a discussion with Marty Abusi. Well, Marty Abusi.
Okay, we have 30 seconds here. I've got to thank my guests for coming on. Thank you. Thank you so much, Paul Davis, president of the Firefighters Local 73. Thank you for coming on. And Captain Wayne Lester, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you.
And maybe we'll do this again. This is Liz Brown. I'll be back same time, same place, and we'll be checking to see if we all do what we say we're going to do. I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress.